For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Standardized tests are good. They teach children that you have to perform. And that is a very important lesson. This, you know, this touchy-feely stuff, this got to go. You will not succeed in this country unless you are disciplined and unless you know how to perform under pressure. You will not succeed unless you become a teacher. Weekdays, noon to 2, right here on Southwest Florida's Power Talk 1200.
10,000 watts of pure, unbridled power. Power Talk 1200 is WPTK, Pine Island Center. Coming up on the top of the hour, and the news is next.
Another tribute to former President Ronald Reagan. I'm Deirdre Bryant. A public memorial service is underway at Eureka College, the former president's alma mater. Reporter Dave Dahl is there.
In central Illinois, this is Reagan country, and in the shadow of a chapel where a freshman Ronald Reagan led a student revolt, Eureka College will honor its most famous alumnus, member of the class of 1932. Reagan followed a girlfriend here and wound up excelling on the field, on the stage, and leading the student senate. A professor tells me he was the ultimate big man on campus. Dave Dahl, ABC News, Eureka, Illinois.
The head of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library says the former president was entombed at about 3 this morning, Pacific time. About 30 people were present. The family left hours earlier. The library is preparing for large crowds that will pay their respects on Monday. An American was shot and killed in an upscale section of Riyadh. Gunmen opened fire as the man pulled into his garage. It's the third killing of a Westerner in Saudi Arabia this week. There's also word that Saudi police found a car rigged with explosives in Riyadh. Another member of Iraq's governing council was assassinated in Baghdad. Iraqi officials blame Saddam Hussein loyalists. Some U.S. cities are on alert for possible terror attacks, but not from Islamic militants.
The FBI has issued a bulletin warning of possible violent environmental protests by a radical group called the Earth Liberation Front, which has been linked to eco-terrorism acts of vandalism and fires at agricultural research labs, logging operations, and SUV dealerships. No specifics were mentioned, but several cities were named as possible targets, including Olympia, Washington, Morgantown, West Virginia, and Worcester, Massachusetts.
ABC's Barbara Britt. An annual show of pomp and pageantry in London. The ceremony for Queen Elizabeth, who actually turned 78 in April, but public celebrations of her birthday are always held on a Saturday in June. This is ABC News.
Every dad's motto is, I'll wait in the car. Grocery stores, malls, your wedding. For some reason, they love waiting in the car. So get them Sirius Satellite Radio this Father's Day. It's got 110 channels, including commercial-free music, news, talk, sports, and the entire NFL.
Get Sirius Satellite Radio for just $9.99 a month. Offer based on prepaid one-year subscription and available for a limited time at participating retailers. Hardware sold separately. Terms, conditions, and activation fee apply. Visit Best Buy, CircuitCityCrutchfield.com, or Sirius.com for details.
With Sirius, now dad'll have some company in the car.
More and more pet owners are discovering PetCare RX, your pet's online drugstore.
I used to buy my dog's heartworm and flea and tick products from my vet, but then I found PetCare RX online. It's definitely worth trying to get the best price you can.
PetCare RX works with your vet to fulfill all your pet's needs.
PetCare RX does it all, from calling my vet to delivering my dog's medicine.
We're your pet's online drugstore. Go to PetCareRx.com. That's PetCareRx.com, or call 1-866-PetCareRx. That's 1-866-PetCare.
Over 3 million dollars of fine art, jewelry, Rolex watches, gold coins, Persian rugs, historical documents, luxury furs, collectibles, and bronze sculptures must be sold at liquidation auctions this Sunday, June 13th. United States Liquidators is auctioning original works of art by Pablo Picasso, Miro, Raoul Dufay, Maurice Utrillo, Camille Pizarro, Louis Eichhardt, H. Behrens, Tarquet, H. Claude and Palomino Pizarro, Chimo and more. Original bronze sculptures by Angelo Basso, Erte and Dali. Over 20 Armani, Yadro, Hummel, and Zantini figurines. Over 200 lots of fine jewelry. Large certified diamond solitaires, 2 to 15 carats. Rolex Presidentials, Cartier, Patek Philippe, Piaget, and others. Masterpiece handmade rugs. Tabriz, Isfahan, Hashan, Herman, Paris, and more. All to be offered at auction this Sunday, June 13th in the Hilton Naples and Towers Naples. Preview at noon starts at 1 p.m. Most items sold with no minimum and no reserve. For information, call 1-800-738-6790. That's 1-800-738-6790.
They were charged with finding an all-water route to the Pacific, yet less than half of them knew how to swim. They nearly starved, ran out of supplies, and failed in their primary mission. So why 200 years later do Lewis and Clark still fascinate us? Maybe it's because it was a military expedition notable for battles that didn't happen. Or because the Indians they met gave them food, horses, and guidance. Maybe it's the teenage mother and the slave who were allowed to speak their minds. Or was it because they chronicled a breathtaking and abundant American landscape? For 3 years, Lewis and Clark traveled a trail of tolerance, enlightenment, and adventure that, we'd soon find out, was too good to be true. It's a trail that still winds through us all. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Ah, printer's out of paper.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, completely out.
How hard is it to refill a printer?
I don't. All you gotta do is open the tray and put the paper in.
Seriously?
And look, the paper's right here on the shelf.
Unbelievable.
It's right here. People, come on.
Excuse me, I just need to
Don't bother. It's out of paper.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'll just refill it.
Don't just take a stand. Act. The most powerful way is to register and vote. It's ridiculously simple. Log on to registerandvote2004.org and take action. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ag Council.
Your weekend choice for Power Talk. This is Southwest Florida's Power Talk 1200 WBTK.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you this afternoon, coming from the blue waters and sandy beaches of gorgeous Fort Myers, Florida and surrounding areas. So glad to have you with us this afternoon. How you doing? Huh? You having a good day today? I hope you are. We've got a good show for you today. By the way, I do want to let you know, coming up around 3:30, we've got an author on today that you're not going to want to miss this. It's Dan Briotti. I hope I'm doing his last name right. Dan Briotti. He wrote this new book called The Halliburton Agenda, The Politics of Oil and Money. Oh my God, you've got to read this book. I told somebody earlier today, it's a book, and when you start reading about Halliburton, and believe me, he's got all the skinny, how they started, you know, all their dirty tricks over the years, you want to take a shower after you've read this book. Fabulous book. So you'll enjoy that coming up around 3:30. We've got Republican Love coming up a little later on today. And, gosh, I don't know what to say. What a week it was, huh? About a week ago. Coming up in an hour or so, we announced to you the death of former President Ronald Wilson Reagan. It happened right during our show last week, and here we are a week later already. And I thought I'd start the show today by throwing my 2 cents worth at the story of the week, and it certainly was the story of the week, probably the story of the year. It might even surpass the election, who knows. The passing of Ronald Reagan and Well, what seemed to me to be the total beatification of him by the overwhelming presence of the right-wing media. And yes, the right-wing media. I don't think it's ever been more evident that the media is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the right than this week. You know, if there ever was a time when the favorite phrase from the right, the left-wing bias, there ever was a time that phrase sounded just totally ridiculous, it was this past week. And, you know, in their zeal to put a coat of cheap paint on the Reagan legacy and establish themselves as the be-all, end-all to everyone on the planet, except for the evildoers, of course, they really outdid themselves this week. They came out of the woodwork. Every TV network, every program, every newspaper, radio program, they all took the let's glorify Ronald Reagan route and ran full speed with it. Now, I'm not here to say that the man didn't deserve the pomp and ceremony that he got this week, because after all, he was twice elected President of the United States. He did legally hold the office for 8 years, and I know many people like him, and so he deserved the honors he got this week, the military funeral and the lying in state and all that. I would expect no less of any president. But you got to understand, they used this as a big right-wing commercial all week. Here locally, you had to see this to believe it. Locally, in the ads of a Republican running for Congress, I saw the most unseemly, tasteless political opportunism I think I've ever witnessed. As you know, and many of you know anyway, our congressman here locally in Fort Myers, Republican Porter Goss, is retiring from the House of Representatives, and he's probably going to be the new CIA boss. Well, this gentleman, Connie Mack, and I know many of you have heard that name. He's the grandson of Connie Mack, who's the first and former owner and manager of the Philadelphia Phillies baseball team. By the way, the original Connie Mack's real name was Cornelius McGillicuddy, not Connie Mack. I don't know if this one's name is Cornelius McGillicuddy or not. I don't know if they got around to changing it or not. But he's running for Porter Goss's seat. And for the past month, his TV and radio ads have been sickening, because he invokes the name of George W. Bush in every sentence, over and over and over every ad. I stand with George Bush in the defense of this nation. I stand with George Bush on Medicare. I stand with George Bush on right to life. I stand with George Bush on no child left behind. George Bush this, George Bush that, until you want to throw up. Well, guess what? Tuesday, he wiped the name George W. Bush right out of his ads and put in the name of Ronald Wilson Reagan. That's right. He used the Reagan name over and over again in his public, it was political whoring. I mean, that's all you can call for it. You know, he's going to buy this seat. He's got the money to do it. We've got a local county commissioner running against him, but I don't think he's got a chance because of the money. I thought in those famous words of Ronald Reagan, well, there you go again. Mac is willing to sell his soul to gain his House seat, and those ads just proved it. Anyway, I want to take a few moments to give you my thoughts on this past week and the rewriting of history that took place. Really, maybe it wasn't rewriting. In most cases, it was just putting on a pair of blinders and conveniently forgetting the, how else can you put it, the sordid details of the Reagan administration that would have gotten most any other president impeached. Like the Iran-Contra affair, for example. Any other president I can think of would have been kicked right out of the White House for such a terrible, egregious violation of trust with the American people. Imagine going behind the back of the Congress of the United States and fighting an illegal war with ill-gotten money gained from selling weapons to terrorists. You know, even the Republican Congress was pissed over that one, but they chose to look the other way because, after all, their duty is not to the American people, but it's to the Republican Party. And don't accuse me of being partisan, because I know there's Democrats guilty of the same thing. But I'll guarantee you that if Bill Clinton had pulled off an illegal scam like hoodwinking Congress and supporting a war in Central America on the sly with ill-gotten money, he would have been ridden out of town on a rail, and he would have deserved it. Hell, they wanted to kick him out of town because of a lie about sex. What would have been their reaction if he had schemed and connived and screwed over Congress like Reagan did? Okay, so you say Ronald Reagan himself had no knowledge of the Iran-Contra affair. Well, let's say you're right, and the old boy didn't know about it because he was having a few of his famous naps at the White House. Why didn't he know? After all, he was the President of the United States. He was the head of state, and it's his responsibility to run the government. Was he guilty of conspiring to defraud the people of the United States, or was he guilty of malfeasance in office? It was one or the other. There's only two choices. And if he truly was a moral, upstanding guy like he was portrayed this past week, then he would have been, he would have allowed the entire Iran-Contra gang to rot in jail. You know, think about that sorry scene. Cappy Weinberger should have and would have gone to prison. And as it was Cappy's silence, it was bought by granting him a pardon. There's no question about that. It was well known all over Washington, D.C., that if he didn't get a pardon, he was going to spill his guts about Iran-Contra. And, you know, I want to puke every time I see Ollie North. You didn't see him at the funeral, did you? You know, knowing that, that he escaped a prison term that was more than justified. Oh, man. You know, when I see him hold up that copy of the Constitution he keeps in his pocket and declares how he defended it, I know it was he who wanted to shred that document and have government controlled by a gang of like-minded criminals working out of the basement of the White House. That was Ollie North's contribution. And to hear the media crow this week about Reagan being solely responsible for ending the Cold War with the Soviet Union was the height of media irresponsibility, and you know it. The seeds were sown for the demise of the Soviet Union long before Ronald Reagan entered the picture. He was just there to harvest the crop that somebody else planted. And I'm not saying he didn't have anything to do with it, but they made it sound like he did it himself. You know, hearing about the wonderful effects of Reaganomics over and over again was particularly galling. You know, there's never been a time in U.S. history when the gap between the rich and the poor grew so much. It was a time of terrible greed and corruption like none other in our history up till George W. Bush took office. And he's in the process of setting new records of economic irresponsibility that'll be really hard to beat. But, you know, Ronald Reagan taught Junior Bush everything he knew about budget deficits. We really are in Ronald Reagan debt, in his debt, and we will be for a long, long time to come. And you know, something else everybody forgot. More top government officials were criminally indicted than in any other administration in history. You know, names like Elliot Abrams, Lynn Nofzinger, Michael Deaver, Cap E. Weinberger, enough said. Of course, the Republicans just forgive and forget and recycle these guys in the government. You know, once a good liar and thief, always a good liar and thief. You know, why not use them again? They're so good at screwing over the people of the United States, so once they can certainly do it again. And then there's the confirmed stories of how Ronald Reagan told several heads of state that he was an army photographer who was among the first on the scene at the German concentration camps and photographed the horrors of those camps for all the world to see. It was, of course, a total exaggeration. It never happened. And there's a story again confirmed by some old-time Republicans about Tip O'Neill showing Reagan the desk in the Speaker's office and proudly telling Reagan it had been a desk of Grover Cleveland, whereupon Reagan told Tip, "I played Grover Cleveland in a movie once." And for the young ones in our audience, Reagan played the part of Grover Cleveland Alexander, a famous baseball pitcher, not the President of the United States. You know, it seemed a lot of the time that the man lived in fantasy land. So, if you have to, go ahead and canonize Mr. Reagan. That's your prerogative. If you want to erase mostly bad memories of the real Reagan presidency, then go ahead, but be advised that most of us just aren't that ignorant. That's the chronicle that the media reported ad nauseum this past week, and then there is no real story. One of them will be borne out by history, and the other will be forgotten. You know, it's just... I watched with fascination. I watched a lot of it. And I know some of you did as well. It was, after all, a historical event, besides just a political event. But my, oh, my, oh, my. There certainly was plenty of politics put into it. Did you hear Hannity and... who was with Hannity yesterday? I'm trying to think who his guest was. Declaring what a wonderful week it was. Oh, George Will. Of course, George Will. Declaring it was a wonderful week for Republicans, that they just gained a lot of ground this week. And by the way, I don't know if it's still up or not. So maybe some of you on Democratic Underground that are listening to the program and are on our thread on the forum. If you happen to know, Bush-Cheney 04 website today, there wasn't any pictures of George Bush on it. It was all Reagan. You think they aren't trying to ride the coffin of Ronald Reagan right down the slope? And you know, that's what they're trying to do. And believe me, you wait. You just wait until you see that convention in New York City. Man, oh man, I can't imagine how much, you know. Well, these guys, they'll stop at nothing. They really will. Hey, I think we're, by the way, call us, 479-5540 if you're here locally, 479-5540. And for those of you listening on the Internet or any place around the country or here locally if you want to, you can call us toll-free at 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. Toll-free. And, of course, if you live in Collier County here in Florida, you can call us toll-free at 263-6579. So we'll await your calls. We've got a couple lines open. Give us a call. Throw your 2 cents worth in on this today. We got our guest coming up in just a few minutes about the Halliburton book. Right now we're going to pause for a few messages. We'll be right back after this.
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show. Democrats, unite. This is the year and now is the time. Your voice must be heard in Southwest Florida. Join hundreds of other concerned American patriots as we combine our energies, our talents, and our resources to announce to all of Southwest Florida that our presence will no longer be ignored, our voices no longer denied. Our party needs us now. Our country needs us now. The Collier County Democratic Club is leading the way, rising on the tide of determination. Join us at our exciting monthly meetings and learn what you can do to make a difference. Call the Democratic Hotline today at area code 239-434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. Again, call 434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. This is the year, and now is the time. The time to start thinking about tomorrow. The time to start thinking about joining the Collier County Democratic Club. This has been a paid political advertisement, approved and paid for by the Collier County Democratic Club, Bill McMahon, Treasurer.
Planning a vacation? The U.S. Tour Operators Association wants you to know that you can travel with confidence when you book a trip with a tour operator. If a crisis occurs, a tour operator acts as an important link between their travelers and airlines, hotels, and the people back home. USTOA wants you to know that tour operators are your advocate. For more information, visit USTOA.com or call 1-800-GO-USTOA for a free copy of the Smart Travelers Planning Kit.
A message for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
If you find that you have to drive at night, travel in well-lighted areas when possible.
Make sure your headlights are clean.
Keep your windshield clear, both inside and out.
Avoid driving at night in the rain or other foul weather.
Also, try to avoid busy streets or other stressful situations.
It's what makes an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Your weekend choice for Power Talk. This is Southwest Florida's Power Talk 1200 WPTK. You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back at you. My, oh my, lots going on. You know, I got a big stack of stuff to talk about here this week, and we only got about 2.5 hours left to do it, and I hope we can get through all of it. I really, really do. That should be about 3 cups of coffee worth, something like that. And of course, they're small cups. Biz, how are you today? She didn't have her mic open.
I'm doing good.
Are you?
Yeah.
How did you fare this week with all the nonstop 24/7 Reagan stuff?
I tell you what, it was kind of hard to avoid it.
Yeah, it was.
I just couldn't believe that it was publicized that much. And I mean, I was born during the Reagan administration, so I mean, all of his policies and all that stuff is just, it's like studying Abe Lincoln to me. It affected me, but not in a way that it affected a lot of other people. So I just thought it was a little bit ridiculous to see his body going on like a campaign trail.
Oh, it was. It definitely was.
And I think that cheapens him.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard tons and tons of people speak volumes of him and very eloquently and very respectfully, but then to see him flown from coast to coast for, you know, the general public to view, which, you know, all fine, well, and good, but I myself can't really rationalize standing in line for 5 hours to walk past a casket draped with an American flag.
Well, it's hard to say what motivates people. I remember so very, very well when I was, how old was I, 17, 18, when Kennedy was killed. I uh, I lived in Ohio at the time, and I really did want to drive to Washington for the services. I really did. But I was young, and you know, I wanted to do that. I don't know if I would have stood in line for all night to do it. But interesting, people's, you know, I saw people all week long interviewed of what they thought about it and so forth, and you could tell a lot of people were just eating up the hype that there was all week long. And like I said before, the guy was a two-term president. Fine, give him the accolades, give him the lion in state, give him the military funeral. That's all well and good. It's all beautiful. He deserved that. But I think the news coverage got carried away. How many of you heard this? I thought that this was one of the most interesting moments last night, and I did watch that last night. And you know, Ronald Reagan was the father of the photo op. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Being with his TV and movie background, he knew how to script. And you know, they do script their own funerals. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you talk about maximum impact. This one had maximum impact. It really did. From start to finish last night, the sun going down, they had it scripted perfectly, and it was beautiful. But there was one thing that took place last night that I thought, wow, this is something. A quote by Ron Jr., and I thought his eulogy of his father was particularly eloquent and funny and serious and thoughtful. And he said this: "Dad was also a deeply, unabashedly religious man. But he never made the fatal mistake of so many politicians by wearing his faith on his sleeve to gain political advantage. True, after he was shot and nearly killed early in his presidency, he came to believe that God had spared him in order that he might do good. But he accepted that as a responsibility, not a mandate. And there's a profound difference."
Wow.
He aimed that right square between the eyes of George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, right there.
You almost have to wonder who he's voting for.
Oh, well, he's a liberal. There's no question about it. He is. The family is divided in their politics, and Ron always has. But that was, I thought that was amazing he said that. But I enjoyed that. You know, we have to go back to the truths. It's fine to live in fantasy land for a week, but I want you to remember one thing. How many of you remember George Bush the First? Pappy Bush, Poppy Bush, whatever you want to call him. You know, when he took over the presidency, he declared that his administration would be a kinder, gentler administration. Why'd he say that? You know who he took over for. He took over for Ronald Reagan. Why did George Bush say that his administration was going to be kinder and gentler? That's because the Reagan administration most certainly was not kinder and gentler, and it certainly was not. You know, starting right off with homeless people. You know, homeless people sleeping in the street years ago was a rare thing. I mean, oh yes, you always saw them on skid rows. But after eight years of Reaganomics and his terrible cuts in the low-income housing and social welfare programs that went along with it, there were homeless people everywhere. The numbers exploded. You know, suddenly we had a new term we never had before, the homeless. You know, I was a kid, I didn't think of anybody being homeless. Yes, I'd been to New York City with my parents, and you'd seen a bum, a wino or something laying on the street. But, you know, that was because he was drunk or something. Maybe, but they had, you know, I remember going to Philadelphia during a Reagan era. And I was in downtown Philadelphia, and there were homeless people everywhere. That was something new. You know, I think Reagan really believed that the private charity system could address homelessness, but it didn't work. And, you know, some have claimed that he was kind of a Robin Hood in reverse. He took from the poor and gave to the rich. Of course, the Republicans are always good at that. And, you know, as usual, they plan on the Americans having a real short attention span, and so they know they can get away with it. But, you know, the thing Reagan did to create so much homelessness was to cut the budget of the Department of Housing and Urban Development by three-quarters. It had a budget of $32 billion in 1981, and it went clear down to $7 billion by 1988. And, you know, the department was the main governmental supporter of subsidized housing for the poor. And, you know, you take that and add it on to the Reagan administration overhauling all the tax codes and to reduce incentives for private developers to create low-income homes. The nation took a hit to its stock of affordable housing. And it's never recovered. It's absolutely never recovered. Call us at 888-602-7500. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. We're going to talk today about Ronald Reagan, but the thing is, you're going to have your chance to talk about it today. You're not going to watch all the right-wingers on TV talking about it. We're going to have our own discussion about it here today. And, you know, there's a lot of people that think Ronald Reagan was single-handedly responsible for the homelessness as we know it today. A lot of people think that. It's, I don't know. I've seen so many interesting... Yeah, here's some quotes, for example. I hunted down a couple of these. He was given a speech one time, and let's see here. Referring to reports of poverty and malnutrition in America, Reagan joked, and I quote, "We were told 4 years ago that 17 million people went to bed hungry each night. Well, that was probably true. They were all on a diet." And that joke went over so well that a few years later he told another one that said, and I quote, "95% of all our families have an adequate daily intake of nutrients. And part of that 5% that don't are trying to lose weight." So, you know, he literally made fun of the problems. Actually made fun of it. And then he's, you know, his evil empire war inciting hyperbole. And seems like there's some parallels, don't you think, between him, he and George W. Bush? I think so. They're trying to draw parallels right now, and that's certainly one. Lack of compassion for the disadvantaged and the poor, and rhetoric that incites war in people. So, interesting. Right now, we're going to go to our guest this week, and I want to tell you folks, the new book is called The Halliburton Agenda, The Politics of Oil and Money. I got this book, I think it was, it's Monday I got this book, and it wasn't hard to read it in a day or so in my spare time because you just didn't want to put it down. Absolutely fabulous book. It's by Dan Briotti. And I highly recommend this book. You want to have the skinny on Halliburton from beginning to end. Well, actually, there's no end and probably never will be to a company like Halliburton. But it's all here. And I want you to brace yourself for this book when you read it. You're going to find some things in this book that are going to make you want to take a shower when you're done with it. You really are. Right now, I'd like to introduce our guest, Dan Briotti. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Dan, I got to tell you, this is one of the best books I've read in a long, long time, and there were things in it that actually made my hair stand on end. There's some shocking things in this book. I don't know why it's not plastered all over the networks everywhere, because this is an amazing book. What caused you to write this book?
Well, I've been doing actually a lot of work in the area of sort of what's known as the Iron Triangle or the military-industrial complex. The last book that I wrote was a book about a company called the Carlyle Group, and that is a company that's staffed with, you know, a lot of ex-Republican administration folks, including, you know, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush worked for them. And I was sort of fascinated with this idea of all of this political influence concentrated within a money-making machine of a company that was focused on defense. And so after the Carlyle book, I started looking at Halliburton, and I found basically the same exact, you know, ingredients that these guys have put together, you know, political influence, military contracts, and big, big-time business.
Well, it almost seems like Brown and Root and Halliburton pioneered this sort of thing.
Well, Brown and Root, certainly. You know, I think that Halliburton was a different company, and until they merged in 1962, they were sort of vastly different. Halliburton itself was a very sort of, you know, science-driven kind of firm, looking for new technologies to help with the oil well services. But Brown and Root was an extremely political animal, basically trading on political influence and using that to garner government contracts all the way for the past 80 years, really. And one of the things that I was trying to get across in the book is that, you know, this is nothing new, what's going on today in Iraq and the controversy over these contracts. This is stuff that's been going on for 80 years with this company.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, and so you folks won't think we're totally partisan on this. I think it's true, and Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say Halliburton and Brown and Root owe their very existence to probably Lyndon Johnson, don't they?
Yeah, Lyndon Johnson and FDR, during the after coming out of the Great Depression, you know, there were a lot of government contracts that were being handed out by FDR's administration. I mean, that was part of the recovery process. And Lyndon Johnson helped to steer those contracts to Brown and Root. And over, you know, a 40-year period of time, while Lyndon Johnson was sort of rising through the political ranks, Brown and Root rode right alongside of him and funded his campaigns and in return received the plumbest contracts that were being handed out.
It's just amazing how they take care of one and scratch each other's backs on this. I don't think I've ever read anything quite, just quite in your face. It's so blatant how they did it.
It was. It's very brazen. And in fact, there's one part of the book where I think it's Lyndon Johnson talking. He's talking to his good friend George Brown, who is, of course, of Brown and Root. And he's explaining to George Brown how, you know, we're going to be this team. We're going to be a team that enriches each other. I'm going to handle the political side of things. You're going to handle the business side. And then their other friend, Alvin Wirtz, was going to handle the legal side. And the three of them together were going to sort of, you know, and I think the wording that he uses is that we're going to establish each other's careers for each other. And that was just sort of a very telling moment as to how this company was going to do its business, for the rest of its existence. And even though Lyndon Johnson and the Brown brothers are gone now, you can see that the legacy still lives on with Dick Cheney and the government contracts that the company's been getting in Iraq.
Well, it says in the book actually that Brown and Root really didn't want Lyndon Johnson to run for the presidency.
He didn't. He actually thought that Lyndon Johnson was more valuable to him as the Senate Majority Leader. And in many ways, that was true. Although when Lyndon Johnson did run for president, Herman Brown did get behind him financially, as he had done his entire career. But in that case, it became very clear that he was going to lose to JFK and became his vice presidential running mate, which turned out to be a very lucrative position for Brown and Root, regardless, because he steered a number of space oriented contracts to Brown and Root, and also some scientific-based contracts. And so, regardless of where Lyndon Johnson was on sort of the hierarchy of politicians, he was extremely valuable to the company.
And for you folks that think Halliburton is some kind of a later day phenomenon, who do you think folks got the contract for building the NASA Center in Houston?
That's right. And contracts during World War II to build Navy ships, and contracts during Vietnam. And in fact, you know, the company has been doing this sort of military outsourcing work for I would say going on 60 years now, since World War II. So what they're doing today is nothing new. In fact, World War II, Vietnam, Bosnia, Somalia, Rwanda, Haiti, Afghanistan, Iraq, you name the conflict, this company has been there. And in fact, in many of these places, they've been dogged by the same complaints, the same overcharges and bribery and kickback kind of schemes that they're enduring right now.
They had like 51,000 employees in Vietnam.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal number. I mean, they literally changed the face of that country overnight. They were paving roads, building ports. They were clearing jungle. Anything that needed to be done was being done by Brown and Root in conjunction with a couple of other big heavy construction firms at the time.
The only difference between then and now, that was not reported, was it?
That's right. It was lightly reported, and certainly they were not receiving the type of scrutiny that they are receiving now in Iraq. And so much of that has to do with the fact that Dick Cheney was the CEO from 1995 to 2000. He really brought with him certainly a certain amount of celebrity. But then also now they're sort of reaping the controversy.
Well, you know, to give you our listeners an idea of just how absurd some of this is, and it is the theater of the absurd, there was a hue and cry against Halliburton and Brown and Root way back in, 1966? And guess who was one leading the charge? Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, this is one of the great ironies of this company. And it also gives you a sense of sort of them playing both sides of the political fence and both sides of the political fence playing against them. They were criticized during the late 60s and early 70s for contracts that they had gained to literally drill a hole through the crust of the earth into the mantle for scientific purposes. But it was an incredibly valuable contract, and it had been essentially awarded to them through Lyndon Johnson's largesse. And as a result, Donald Rumsfeld, who was a young congressman at the time from Illinois, stood up and decried the fact that it was clearly political connections that got Brown and Root this contract. And as a result, the contract was ultimately scuttled. So I find it so ironic that today, Donald Rumsfeld, being Secretary of Defense, is on the other side of this equation.
Yeah, and of course he doesn't have to explain that. No reporter's going to ask him that question. One of the things, Dan, that I found particularly interesting about some of these contracts that were let to Brown and Root and to Halliburton is that in many cases they had zero experience in what they were bidding on.
That's right, and that gives you an idea of sort of the philosophy of this company. They put their manpower into getting contracts. So they put their political influence and all of their legwork into actually securing the contract in the first place, because they knew once you have a contract, then it just requires manpower. You just throw enough people at it, and they could build a dam, or they could build Navy boats, or they could drill a hole to the mantle. They could do whatever they had to do if they just had enough men to do it. And once you have the contract, you can charge pretty much whatever you want after that. You just start ratcheting up the costs, and it's very difficult. It sometimes becomes more expensive to remove a contractor in the middle of a deal than to pay them more.
Oh, well, sure. In the case of I think it's called the Mansfield Dam you talked about. What
is right,
the
just cost, outside of Austin,
the cost ended up being, what, 10 times what they originally bid?
At least, and that was really the first time that Lyndon Johnson and the Brown brothers realized what an extraordinary partnership that this was going to be. At that time, Lyndon Johnson was literally working for the Brown brothers in Washington, D.C., and there is a ton of correspondence that you can look up down in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas in the Lyndon Johnson Library. You can find correspondence between the Brown brothers and Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson saying things like, I'm really working hard for you guys out here. I'm going to get this contract. And, it literally seems like that Lyndon Johnson was working for Brown and Root.
Well, Dan, everyone knows, or at least those of us who like to think we are rational, we like to think that, of course, they give contracts to these people to save the government money. Rather than having the Army Corps of Engineers or somebody do the job, we let these contracts to private individuals to save money. But it didn't quite work out that way. Why isn't there more? Explain to the audience why there isn't more competition for these.
Well, it's funny that there's two things. There's two reasons why why some of us are enamored with the idea of outsourcing and privatizing the military. One is because we feel that it'll create more efficient markets. Like you said, there will be more competition, and the government will get a better price on its services. The other is that, you can penalize a company for doing a bad job by taking them off the job. Well, Halliburton has skirted both of those market fixes, because in the case of competition, there is no one else that can do the job that Halliburton does in terms of supporting the Army logistics, because they've had this contract, an umbrella contract, for so long that all the other competition has pretty much withered and died because of the nature of the contract itself.
From what I understand, some of the reasons the other contractors withered and died is because they rigged the bidding process, the specifications for it, so only one company could get it.
Right, that's the other thing. Halliburton designed the contract that they ultimately bid on and won, which in the Federal Code of Regulations is clearly a violation of those regulations. However, Dick Cheney happened to be Secretary of Defense while all this happened back in 1992, and of course we know that 3 years later he became the CEO of the company.
So here we are in this modern-day war with Iraq right now, and we've heard about the no-bid contracts. We've heard about I get mixed up which one was which with Kellogg Brown and Root about this gasoline scam,
right,
and the meal scam,
right?
And yet They get fined, and they get fined millions of dollars, but just go right on with business as usual.
Oh, $1 million fine is nothing when you're looking at $17 billion in total contracts, potential total contracts coming out of Iraq for this company. You know, that's a phenomenal sum of money. Think of that, $17 billion for one company. I'll take a fine, a slap on the wrist, some bad publicity, but as long as I bring home that paycheck, it's not going to hurt them too much. You know, right now they're under investigation by four different government agencies, not to mention international agencies and international governments.
Well, that's nothing new to them.
It's nothing new to them. It's priced into the cost of doing business for them. And you know, you mentioned that they'll be in Iraq for as far as we can see, they will be there. In fact, they're going to be the only company that has the type of expertise with the Iraq oil infrastructure that they have. So they'll be there as long as we can see.
It seems to me that they've completely turned this thing upside down, that it started out that they needed the government and should kowtow to the government to get the contract and do what needs to be done properly to satisfy the contract. And now it appears that the military is afraid of these guys because, oh, my God, who else will do the job?
That's right. And also, you know, I mean, they cannot be removed. They're essentially a branch of the armed forces now. But the other disconcerting thing is that the Army itself is sometimes confused about who is the customer in this relationship and who is the vendor. And if you there's a part in the book that sort of describes this confusion in which, you know, an Army officer is sending a note to another Army officer saying, "Don't upset Halliburton. They're our customer." And you have to read that again and say, wait a second.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
Absolutely,
you know,
amazing.
They're their customer. How did it get to this place where they're actually confused?
Well, who's the modern-day Lyndon Johnson, or is there a group of them now?
Well, there is a group, but there really always was a group when it came to Halliburton and Brown and Root. I mean, it wasn't just Lyndon Johnson, although he was by far the most powerful and influential politician that they had. Clearly Dick Cheney is the one that you've got to keep your eye on. I mean, as vice president, we've already seen this email come out that clearly puts Dick Cheney smack in the middle of the no-bid contract that Halliburton won to rebuild the infrastructure in Iraq. And that looks an awful lot like what they did with Lyndon Johnson for many, many years. So he is the modern-day Lyndon Johnson.
Well, these guys are simply amazing. Their gall, the more I read about this book, you know, the deeper I got into it, I thought, oh, man, in some ways I'm sorry I learned some of this. And in other ways you want to get up and shout it from the rooftops. But like you just mentioned, Dan, we do get up and shout it from the rooftops, and the military and the government says, so what?
Yeah, we're trying. But this, you know, this administration has really an amazing way of sort of just deflecting this kind of controversy, and I hope that, you know, this, along with some other things that are going on right now, will grab enough of the public's attention to really demand some change, and hopefully we'll see that change in November.
It seems like Henry Waxman is doing his best, but they'll probably slough him off. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are congressmen and senators who are concerned about this and have been calling for an investigation and calling for more some more detailed information out of the Pentagon and the Army Corps of Engineers. But so far, they have not gotten what they are looking for, and so this remains sort of an ambiguous problem.
It someplace in the book, I can't remember who it was exactly, but they were talking about business. And, you know, it used to be that if you had a business, you concentrated on your product, your service, whatever it was you did, and you tried to be the best you could and then grow. Nowadays, the first thing you need to do, rather than get a good business plan, is to get a politician on your side.
That's right. It's the revolving door of Washington, D.C. And as I was mentioning earlier, you know, my first book, The Iron Triangle, was all about this company, the Carlyle Group, which has it perfected. In just 15 short years, this company really nailed how to work the revolving door in Washington, D.C. to your advantage. But as we've been talking about, you know, Halliburton has been doing this for 80 years now, and they are they're the old pros, they're the old hand, and we're seeing the benefits of playing that game today.
Dan is an expert on this subject. What do you think are the chances of these people really being outed put forth for everybody to see, and maybe losing their contracts and being exposed for exactly what they are?
Well, I think it's very unlikely. There's always enough sort of gray area to play within to explain things away, for the administration to explain things away, and for the company to explain things away. And right now, we're in such a polarized political environment that people listen to news clips and hear what they want to hear, and so people spin things in their own minds today. So, I don't think that you can generate the same kind of unified public outrage to make a change like this happen that you used to be able to.
Especially when it's my contention anyway that the right literally controls the media. And that should be the source of the outrage, but it appears that just a story here and there is never going to do it.
Yeah, it's hard to explain why the media hasn't embraced this and sort of clung to it like a pit bull, like they should be. We're doing the best we can.
And there's big news in this. There's big news in this for people to know. Millions of Americans have heard Dick Cheney get up and say he has no contact, no affiliation with Halliburton whatsoever anymore. He said that over and over and over again. Yet it's not true.
It's clearly not true. He's in contact with the company and the executive. They still sort of look up to him as sort of this godfather type figure, which to me is unconscionable when you look at his track record as CEO. I mean, he had a terrible, terrible track record. He saddled the company with $4 billion in asbestos liability. He did business with Iraq while he was CEO, in between wars that he led against Saddam Hussein. He was doing business with Iraq. I mean, some of these things that are in the book, you read and you say, that can't be right, but it's 100% true. And he's trying to explain a lot of these things away, but it is a lot of the explanations sort of leave you scratching your head.
Well, Dan, a lot of people, and I know people that'll look at a story like that and go, well, so what? That's just the way it is, and
yeah,
they all do it, and the Democrats have done it, but damn it, somebody's got to stop it.
Yeah, it's very disheartening to hear people say that. That's just the way it is, or isn't this the way everybody does business, or things like that. There are a lot of things that are wrong with this country and that have been done for a long time, but that doesn't mean we should stop trying to change that in a positive manner. So I hope that people won't look at this issue and slough it off and think that that's just the way it is, because it doesn't have to be like that.
888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. If you have a question for Dan, we've got just a few minutes left. We're going to have him on. Like I said, when I looked at this book, when Eisenhower was talked about the military-industrial complex, it appears to me he must have had one outfit in mind, and that was Mr. Brown and Halliburton and those folks. But of course, they didn't merge until when? Was it 62?
62, yeah.
Yeah. So Eisenhower knew about both of them before that, but they're part of the problem that he was talking about when he left office and talked about the fears about the military-industrial complex. Dan, what do you see? What do you see as the answer to this? What do you see that can be done?
Well, there's got to be a better way of controlling how politicians use their influence, particularly within while they're in office. The fact that Dick Cheney had any involvement in the letting of this no-bid secretive contract to his former company needs to be investigated, and there needs to be punishment handed out. I mean, the American people deserve to know at what level was Dick Cheney involved in this thing. So there needs to be some investigation, and there needs to be some regulation, and I know everyone hates that word. It's a dirty word, but I'm sorry. This revolving door needs to be better regulated, because this one-year cooling-off period that most politicians are supposed to take after they leave office and before they take a job in the private sector is a joke, and no one's enforcing it, and no one's paying any attention to it. So there does need to be more regulation, and hopefully eventually we can get some legislation and change some of the laws that govern our public officials.
Dan, if you don't mind, we're going to take a caller right now. We've got Diane in Fort Myers. Diane, do you have a question for Dan?
Yes, Guy. I agree with the guy, you know, your author here. I didn't get his name. I'll have to listen at the end here. But I will read his book. But how can you address these things without getting into the nitty-gritty of the truth? And that has to do with Skull and Bones, the Illuminati. That has to do with the CFR, the Carlyle Group, the Bilderbergers. How can you ignore that?
Well, we're you know, as I said, you know, my first book was the Carlyle Group, and then it was Halliburton, and maybe the next one will be the Skull and Bones. So.
Yes, because, I mean, today they're making it look like we're having real elections in this country.
Yeah.
We're not. We are not.
You know, sometimes the truth is the hardest thing to believe, and I think that, you know, in a lot of these cases, people read some of this stuff, and it seems so fantastic to them that they don't believe it. They kind of think it's conspiracy theory.
It is fantastic, but it is factual.
But it is factual. I
That's
agree.
Right.
And so you know, how do you do it? Well, you know, the way that I've chosen to do it is to keep investigating these things and do what I know how to do. Which
well,
is,
you're on the right track, especially about the John Kennedy murders, and especially about the 911, the towers coming down. You're on the right track.
Yeah, and I would definitely recommend that you watch Michael Moore's new movie, Fahrenheit 9/11.
Well, I was saying it from day one.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not nothing new to me.
Well, Dan, and thank you for your call, Diane.
Thank you.
Dan, what do you think the chances are? You know, there's this little investigation going on. I don't know how deep it's going right now into Mr. Cheney's affiliation with these no-bid contracts when he's sworn he didn't. Where do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think, you know, as I was saying earlier, I think that there will be a lot of gray area within which, you know, some of the explanations will come out. I mean, everything is so political and so partisan right now that I almost feel like it would be impossible to really go after one of these guys, either Bush or Cheney or any of his cabinet. I mean, you see that George Tenet was the sacrificial lamb, obviously, and he was a Clinton appointee, so... you know that these guys have circled the wagons, and they've got an answer for everything. The explanations ring hollow to me. So I hope that some of the truth will come out and some good change will come from that. But frankly, I'm skeptical.
Somebody's going to have to step up because these guys aren't. You know, sometimes we think they're not real smart, but they're smart enough to cover their tracks pretty doggone well.
Yes, they are.
Dan, I'd like to thank you so much for being on the program today. This is a great book, folks. It's called The Halliburton Agenda, The Politics of Oil and Money. And if you want to get yourself up to speed on the nitty-gritty about Halliburton and Brown and Root and how these people work hand-in-hand, with cash in hand, by the way, for the politicians, you really need to read this book. It's one of the finest books I've read in the last couple of years. I know you will enjoy it. And, Dan, I'd like to thank you so much for being on our program today.
Thank you, guys.
This really is an amazing read. You need to get this book. Again, it's called The Halliburton Agenda, and it's available just everywhere at all the bookstores around the area and so forth. And wow. I just didn't, you know, it's so seldom anymore that a book comes out that you don't want to put down. It might not be written the way you like to read or whatever, but this one is just a dandy. When we come back from the top of the news, I want you to get your questions ready, your comments ready. We are going to talk about this 24/7 thing that went on all week this past week. What do you think about it? What's your feelings about it? Do you think they've totally rewritten history now? Do you think, well, you know, I don't know about you, but I saw a lot of people interviewed this week that I knew. You could just tell by listening to them that they were parroting the words of right-wing radio, absolutely parroting what they'd heard about this, and you know, it's about Reagan being the savior of our country and bringing, you know, renewing faith in the country and all that. I don't give him that kind of credit. I can't personally speak for what kind of a man he was because I didn't know him. But I know some of the things he did, and some of the things he did were not honorable. They were not good. They were not good for America. They're underhanded, some of the things were done. And like I mentioned in the opening of the show today, either he was incompetent in many areas, or he just you know, by not giving a damn? I don't know. You know, we were left with that impression a lot of times, that he just didn't give a damn and he was perfectly willing to delegate things. But yet all week long we saw the story of him just being actually, well, you know, he's going to join Mother Teresa in a lot of people's minds. And I don't think that should be the case. And I believe the right-wing media is succeeding in rewriting history here. And I'd like to know your thoughts on it. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. And one other thing we might want to talk about, this is sad. This is very, very, very sad. You might want to comment on this when we come back. Rush Limbaugh, his marriage is breaking up. It's his third one, and he and Marta are splitting up. And I don't know whether it's the OxyContin or what it was, but Rush and his bride of 10 years are splitting up. Seems like Rush is just a little hard to get along with when he's sober, if he is. So we're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show on 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida, and we'll be right back after the news.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James.
Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Gearing up for more crowds, I'm Deirdre Bryant. Many people still hoping to pay their respects to former President Ronald Reagan will start lining up outside his presidential library Monday morning. ABC's Carlos Grande is in Simi Valley, California.
Now, the Ronald Reagan Library will remain closed this weekend. They're getting it ready for Monday when it will reopen at 10 a.m., and they expect a huge crowd here, more Americans who want to come here to say goodbye.
The former president was entombed in the wee hours of the morning. Only about 30 people were present. Family members left earlier after a long day of ceremonies on both coasts. Over 11,000 pieces of Ronald Reagan memorabilia are being offered on eBay. ABC's Richard Davies has more on that.
The death of President Reagan also increases the profit motive for potential sellers. The value of famous people's signatures, for example, usually jumps after their death. eBay says it's become a cultural barometer. The large number of Reagan souvenirs for sale now is similar to what happened when Bob Hope died last year.
There's a memorial service for the former president at his alma mater, Eureka College in Illinois. Americans are being urged to exercise the utmost caution in Saudi Arabia. An American man was gunned down in his car as he parked it at his home in an upscale section of Riyadh. He was the third Westerner killed this week. Another member of Iraq's interim government has been assassinated. ABC's Jim Sciutto is in Baghdad.
Iraq's deputy foreign minister was killed as he went to the office this morning, mortally wounded in a very busy neighborhood on a very busy street. It's the second assassination of a senior Iraqi figure in the last 3 weeks, and it comes in the run-up to the handover on June 30th, when U.S. and Iraqi officials were expecting an upsurge in violence.
Iraqi authorities blame Saddam Hussein loyalists for the assassination. A new Associated Press poll finds registered voters favor Senator John Edwards as the Democratic vice presidential candidate. A Democratic strategist cautions against reading too much into the survey, since it's hypothetical and based on name recognition. This is ABC News.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art. Because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So who better than you to appreciate how Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once? Buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. In addition to finding what you need for your business, you'll find name brand electronics, sporting goods, and fine jewelry, as well as many of the everyday essentials every home needs. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low costs on items for your home as you do on items for your business. And when you're really pressed for time, try using Click and Pull and Fax and Pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small.
Over $3 million of fine art, jewelry, Rolex watches, gold coins, Persian rugs, historical documents, luxury furs, collectibles, and bronze sculptures must be sold at liquidation auctions this Sunday, June 13th. United States Liquidators is auctioning original works of art by Pablo Picasso, Miro, Raul Dufay, Maurice Utrillo, Camille Pizarro, Louis Eichhardt, H. Barron, Starkey, H. Claude and Paulomil Pizarro, Chimon and more. Original bronze sculptures by Angelo Basso, Arte and Dali. Over 20 Armani, Yadro, Hummel and Santini figurines. Over 200 lots of fine jewelry. Large certified diamond solitaires, 2 to 15 carats. Rolex Presidentials, Cartier, Patek Philippe, Piaget and others. Masterpiece handmade rugs. Tabriz, Isfahan, Hashan, Kerman, Paris and more. All to be offered at auction this Sunday, June 13th in the Hilton Naples and Towers Naples. Preview at noon starts at 1 p.m. Most items sold with no minimum and no reserve. For information, call 1-800-738-6790. That's 1-800-738-6790.
The first thing you do, the first chance you get, make the first thing you watch. Wink News This Morning. Live on scene reports. Real-time traffic. Weather every 8 minutes. And the best morning news team around. Patrick Comer, Stacey Adams, Marisa Holmes. Wink News This Morning. First, for you. Wink News has Southwest Florida's only team of certified meteorologists. Weather experts with the experience that makes the difference when the weather is the big story. Meteorologist Jim Farrell has been forecasting Southwest Florida weather for 2 decades. And meteorologist Marisa Oakes, Scott Zediker, and Janine Albert make Wink the only place to turn for weather from certified local meteorologists around the clock. Accurate, dependable, certified, and only on Wink News.
And coming up in the next news break, perhaps the single most important thing you can do to help your child learn when back in school. Hey, better yet, we'll tell you right now. The better your child can see in school, the easier your child can learn in school. Vision screenings are good, but they can't detect many vision problems that interfere with learning. So make sure your child has a comprehensive eye exam for back in school.
A message from the American Optometric Association.
Nibus in the morning.
All right. I'm compassionate. I know you feel horrible. Go home.
I can't. I don't have a way to get home.
Of course you have a way to get home.
Should have walked to the subway.
No, but I mean, he's got a... My God, he's got a limousine. What are you talking about?
Brant, he's busy this morning.
What do you mean, Brant's busy?
He's taking my cat to the vet.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. How's the cat going to get there?
Punt it off the terrace. Okay. Too sick. Get rid of it.
Weekdays at 6 a.m. on Power Talk 1200.
God bless America.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. And now... You've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, Guy James with you, coming from beautiful Fort Myers, Florida, and, of course, on the Internet around the world, and so glad to have all you folks listening. You know, I really do appreciate getting cards and letters and so forth from the folks around the country, around this area, and around the world. We regularly get email from Japan and France and England and the Czech Republic recently, and it's wonderful to know that those folks are able to listen to the program, and if you can't listen to it when we're on live, even for you local folks that are listening on the radio, you can always catch our show archived and download it and listen to it later if you like at www.whiterosesociety.org. Ben Birch runs that outfit, and I'll tell you what, he's got a lot of great programs on there, and he does a bang-up job. Ben is a stand-up guy and helping in this effort we have to take Mr. Bush out of the White House. That's I think that's what it's all about. I really do. Right, we're going to go to the phones right now. And by the way, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. Locally, you can call us at 479-5540. You know, business is good coffee you brought in. It's fresh.
I told you, it's, you know, hot out of the pot.
Oh, it's good. It's good coffee.
I almost burned myself pouring it out of there.
See, a lot of you think we didn't drink coffee here in South Florida because it's hot. And it is hot today. There's no doubt about it. But we're inside a nice, cool building. Nothing like a good cup of coffee.
Oh, it's like a freezer in here.
Oh, get out. We're going to go to the phones right now. You see, here's the deal. I come in, I say it's hot in here, so Biz turns the temperature down.
And then I put on about four jackets.
Yeah, she's got coats on over there. She looks like an Eskimo.
I'm a true Floridian. When it drops below 75, it's jeans and sweatshirts for me.
That's a fact, folks. You know, if you don't live here in Florida, you can always tell who the natives are.
Oh, God, yeah.
When it gets down to, like, in the wintertime, it's funny, actually. When in the wintertime it gets down to, like, 40 or 50, you know, these people go nuts. They put on gloves and earmuffs and hoods. And you know, it can be 50 degrees. And go, oh, I'm freezing.
Well, now, in defense, I have gloves and a hat in my truck for, you know, the 2 weeks of winter that we get down here, because I don't have heat in my car, so I get into an ice chest.
You don't need heat in your car.
You know,
Biz, you are a weenie.
I'm a third generation Floridian.
I forgive you. Hey, we're going to go to the phones right now. I tell you, we're going to go to John in Fort Myers. John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, guy. Thanks for taking my call. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the series of memorials that were going on for Ronald Reagan. I was beginning to think that they were going to delay his burial until after the election with the number of memorials that they were running. But what really struck me was this kind of mean-spirited nastiness on the part of the neocons, the way that they were using this event. First, it started out right after Reagan died. I was hearing all the radio talk show hosts say, "Oh yeah, watch what the liberals will say about Reagan this week. Watch what." And the liberals, the Democrats, however you want to define their enemies at any given moment, were pretty much silent on the subject.
John, they didn't get a chance to say anything.
Well, I think in all deference, they wouldn't have.
No, they didn't. And the chances they had, they didn't. But you know, look at it, it was 100-1 right wingers as usual.
Of course. Well, but then the few people who were quoted, like Ted Kennedy and people like that, had things to say. They were just talked about his affable personality, how he was, you know, he was a person, no matter how you viewed him politically on a personal level, he was very easy to deal with, very easy to be with. And then I heard one talk show host criticizing that. I'm sick of these liberals talking about how Reagan was affable and avuncular, as though that was the only thing that defined it. They were looking for enemies. I even heard a guy today on one of your sister stations there, a guy who hawks cigars on Saturday, quoting some Cuban newspaper. Some newspaper in Havana that said something disparaging about Reagan. And honest to God, this guy said, and I wanted to get a bunch of mercenaries together and go down there and take him out when I read that. I thought, who have we given, I mean, present company accepted, please note that, but who have we given microphones to in this country?
Oh, you know, John, that brings up an important point. You bring up microphones. One of the worst things, and I know a lot of people in this country don't even know what the hell I'm talking about, but you want to know where all this right-wing controlled media came from? It was spawned during the Ronald Reagan administration when they dumped the Fairness Doctrine. That allowed these mega companies to buy up the media and speak with one voice like they're doing right now, the Rupert Murdochs and the Fox Networks, and it's terrible. Clear Channel, you know. So and Ronald Reagan was directly responsible for that, and you know, no one's ever going to tell me that that wasn't the reason, so they could take political control of the airways.
Well, but don't you agree? I mean, on the occasion of the man's death, we should just say farewell. You were good in these ways. You know, some different people will say different good things about anybody at their wake or their eulogy, and that's the way that it should be. But why are the neocons using the occasion of his death as some sort of like a banner? It's as though you've got a bunch of crusaders with a picture of a martyred saint that they're carrying into battle, and they're looking for enemies that aren't even there.
Absolutely. You know, John, you hit on the point right directly, the nail on the head right there. I saw a couple of people interviewed this week and said the conservative agenda has been reborn. What has that got to do with Ronald Reagan dying? Just taking political advantage of this, that's all.
Well, yeah, there must have been this huge blueprint laid out long before his death about, you know, how the man's done everything he could do for the Republican Party, and including dying in an election year. I mean, that sounds crass, but I mean, his party has just, not his party, I don't want to brand all Republicans with this, but the neocons have jumped on this with a fervor that is kind of frightening.
And you know what, John? I don't think we've seen anything yet. I think they're going to ride this pony as far as they can.
Oh, I believe so as well. It's amazing. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I was around when Eisenhower died. It was nothing like this.
Oh, no.
Nixon, who was in many ways a standard bearer for the new Republican Party, despite all his failures.
I remember Harry Truman's death very well. He didn't plan an elaborate funeral, and you know, I doubt that Gerald Ford's, when that time comes, he's what, 90 now or so, that won't be a big lavish affair. It's hard to imagine him out doing this. Of course, for you youngsters out there that didn't win the round for the Kennedy funeral, this was a lavish affair. This was, and make no mistake about it, and a lot of it, without question, was copied after the Kennedy funeral. But this was very small compared to the Kennedy funeral.
Yeah, it was. I appreciate you taking my call, Guy. I just wanted to spew a little bit. It's been building up all week, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so.
John, thanks.
It
was a great call. Appreciate
it very
much.
All right.
We're going to go to Bob in Cape Coral right now. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Hey, just wanted to let you know that my wife and I, we donated to your show today. We set aside 3 hours every week to listen to you, and we figure that's the least that we can do. And I hope the other listeners also do the same.
Well, thank you. We are a donator-supported show, and we appreciate it. That's the only way we stay on the air. For those of you that don't know, a lot of you have heard us say this. Nobody comes to someone from the left and says, hey, why don't you do a radio show? And you usually have to buy your time, which is what we do here. And we would not be on the air without the support of our listeners.
No doubt about that. But the reason why I called you, too, was you had mentioned about talking about Mr. Family Values, Mr. Limbaugh, on his third divorce. It's just absolutely amazing to me that they get their marching orders, all these neocons, from a man who's had three divorces, a drug addict, and this is the man that they take their thoughts from every day, their news.
Hey, but he learned well, didn't he, Bob? Released the news on Friday on Friday afternoon late, out of the news cycle when there's a huge funeral thing going on. I mean, he couldn't have picked a better time to release it.
But how could you listen to a man like that? But I don't know. We were talking too earlier too about Reagan. I just wanted to throw my two cents on Reagan. You and I have talked in the past about the liberal being a dirty word. In my opinion, it was Reagan who started that. Remember his speech, that L word.
Absolutely.
He's the one that started that.
Absolutely.
But reason why it gets me irked about this whole thing with Reagan is that he started to make liberal a bad word. But if you look at all the tyrannical despots in this whole world, it's conservative is what they call it. Like the hardliners in China, they call them conservative. The hardliners in Iran, they call them conservative. And anybody that's for peace or a little more freedom for the people, they call them liberal. So what does that tell you?
Well, you're exactly right. The hardcore conservatives, they tend to be aggressive and combative, and they love that tough guy image that appeals to their constituency, mostly here in this country, mostly white males. They got no qualms about using up the Earth's resources because what the hell? They figure Armageddon's coming anyway. We won't be here. You know, they're perfectly willing to exploit the physical labor of the poor people, and it's a mess. Whereas the Democrats or liberals on the other side think completely different. You know, they got confidence in government. You know, Democrats will give primacy to social rather than individual interest. And that doesn't necessarily make you a socialist. Call it what you will. But Democrats ordinarily care about society. And if we're going to be individuals, we have to live in a decent society, and we have to make sure that society is good. And I don't think Republicans got no use for that.
Well, that's it. They fall right in line with the old conservative way throughout the world. I mean, conservative means hard line, no equivocation. It's like, this is the way it is. But hopefully what happened in England this week, I'm sure you heard about with Tony Blair, he's got blasted.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm hoping that's a sign of things to come in this country, too. I really think we're going to take back Congress. I really, really have a good feeling about it this time. In 2002, I didn't have that feeling, but I really do in this 2004. What do you think about that?
I feel good about it, although I heard something very unsettling this week. As you know, here in Southwest Florida, we're all pumped up because we've got big numbers of people. We had this deal for the Senate candidates down at the Philharmonic in Naples the other night. Had a nice big crowd, much bigger than the Republican crowd that showed up for theirs. And we're energized and all, and I read someplace that we've got 10 or 12,000 volunteers around the state, you know, signing people up, registering them and so forth. I heard this week the Republicans are quietly have 50,000.
Wow, that's a big challenge.
So we're just going to have to do four times as much.
Hey, guys, I sent you over an email today. I hope you got it, about what you need to believe to be a Republican. I don't know if you get a chance to read that or not.
Not yet, but I will after the show.
But if you get a chance, take a look at it. I appreciate it, guy.
Bob, thanks so much for your call. Great call.
Bye-bye.
Going to go to Dan in Connecticut. Dan, welcome to the show.
Howdy.
What's on your mind today, Dan?
There's a few things I comment on. If there's anything you want to go into in more detail, that's fine. I wanted to mention that I just discovered your show today for the first time, and I started to listen to Air America up here because I can just barely pick up, you know, that station up there. Easy to listen to. They can be a little rough to listen to.
we were on Air America last Sunday evening on the Laura Flanders show, along with Tom Hartman. We had a good conservative lady Blanquita column, and we had an interesting evening. It was great.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed with a lot of these groups, and I think they're making a big mistake here, is they think that all Democrats have to hate God, hate religion, and be just huge cheerleaders for everything gay, I'm not going to come down real strong either way on any of that. I'm just saying they're excluding a lot of regular people who don't like Bush at all, but who do believe in God. I mean, and I'm getting that a lot from that previously mentioned station. I like them and I'm glad they're there, but they have this real anything related to belief is got to be Republican, got to be bad. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're so right. Now, I'm glad you brought this up, Dan. I think many times some of us on the left, not me, scorn religion and scorn people's personal beliefs in deities and the hereafter and all that. And I'm not a person who. I don't have a collar on or anything like that, but I do have my personal religious beliefs, and I think it's a big mistake to disparage that. I do, and I hate it when I see that happen, and I hate it just as much as I see the Republicans this week trying to sign up, how many is 1,600 churches to further their cause. You know, that's just as wrong. And perhaps since we fight against something like that, some people in America look at us and go, look at this, they're fighting against the church. No, we're not. That's not the idea. Did you see that this week? They're trying to sign up 1,600 churches.
Like,
you
know, the 700 club voting guides.
Yeah, and that's wrong. That's wrong. They have a tax-exempt status. They need to stay out of it. They can have their personal views if they want to, but as a congregation and a minister up in front of a congregation, that's absolutely wrong. And I don't want people to take that wrong, that we're disparaging religion by that. We're not. Mm-hmm. I don't want my church doing that.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who, like, if you ask them on every issue, they'd be against George Bush, but if someone comes and tells them at their church that, look, if you vote for this other guy, they will make the decision on that, because that's the way religious belief is, that it's sort of an absolute thing in certain morals that you will make your decision on that one thing, even if on all the economic and health care issues it's the wrong guy. And that's something you really got to be careful.
Oh, well, you know, you're right, Dan. And you look at this thing, you need to put the whole deal on a scales, and a lot of people don't, because you'll have to admit, you know, the solid Bible belt south, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I'll bet you it's at least 80% vote against Democrats strictly on the
right.
Because of the right to life issue.
Even though Democratic programs would help them.
Yes.
90% of them.
But they'll go against that,
mm-hmm.
and on one issue. Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, we were talking about Reagan. I was thinking more of the old deregulation stuff. Somebody, you were mentioned it a little while ago, a couple callers ago. Have you read Eric Schloss's Fast Food Nation?
Oh, yeah.
The whole meat industry is allowed to basically watch themselves, do whatever they want, not check for this, let kids die. Kids die more than anyone because of the tainted food. And that's all Reagan's handiwork. There's another book out, Consuming Kids, by Susan Lynn. And, I don't get any money from any of this. They're great books about how how all the kids are being programmed. You know, McDonald's, the Walt
sure.
Disney, all the fast food places are all this massive tie-in all the time. That's another gift of the Reagan administration.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Of course, you know, he was a spokesman for corporate America for a long, long time before he became president, so all of that came perfectly natural to him. Dan, thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
I do appreciate it. Keep listening. We're glad to have you along with us.
Okay, thanks.
Let's see, who do we have on the line here right now? I think we need to go to Stephanie in Carolina. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, guy. You're probably not used to hearing me on the air. You're probably used to hearing Michael.
Oh, yes.
Well, he's not here today, so I'm calling in.
Well, I'm glad to hear from you. I didn't want to hear from him anyway. I'd rather talk to you anytime.
There you go. I'm sure. Okay, I want to talk about the
I'm kidding, funeral. Folks, because I'm talking to the lovely bride of our former co-host, Michael, and we miss Michael. Michael, for those of you that are new to the program, he was our co-host for almost a year, I believe, and a walking, talking encyclopedia of political facts and ideas, a great guy, too. Okay, before I interrupt you.
And a great husband.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. But I'm calling because I've just got some things to say about the Reagan funeral.
Yes.
Okay, I thought it was interesting that the press really picked up on, well, not really the press, but definitely the viewers picked up on some of the comments that Ron Jr. made.
Oh, yeah.
At the little private burial thing that the family had.
Yeah, that one statement about wearing a religion on your sleeve. I think that was a baseball bat to right to the forehead of George Bush Jr.
And rightly so, rightly
yeah.
so. But one of the things that I noticed that a lot of people seemed to miss was during the service in the National Cathedral. I guess I couldn't really tell who was speaking. I wasn't paying that much attention. But one of the priests made the comment. He was talking about Reagan. And he said, you know, Reagan was a shining beam of light. But he was transparent. This man had no hidden agenda.
Oh, my.
And I really wondered exactly who was he speaking to. And, you know, Bush is so, he's so sneaky. And one of the sneakiest things that he did was to use an executive order to keep the Reagan papers hidden.
Sure.
And that's where I started making that connection. I thought that was just really interesting that the priests all fit to mention this.
Well, you know, they're going to try their best to wallpaper Ronald Reagan's face right over George Bush's body and have him try and be Ronald Reagan, and it's not going to work. To many Republicans, Ronald Reagan is just absolutely larger than life.
Oh, well, he's going to be a saint.
Absolutely.
Saint Ronnie. But I just thought that was so interesting because the priest did bring that up, and I was thinking about this executive order that Bush used to hide the Reagan papers. And I want to know if they're so proud of him, that this guy is such a saint. If he has ascended to the right hand of God, why can't we see his papers?
Yeah, well, why can't we see Junior's papers or his father's papers either? There's no good reason. You know, we're taxpayers, damn it. We need to have some of this stuff out in the open so we can see what's going on, not find out 50 years later and then go, oh, gee, wish we'd have known.
Exactly. These people work for us, and they seem to, well, they never thought that, but they need to be reminded.
Well, they forget that just about the moment they raise their hand and take the oath of office. They forget that rather quickly. You know, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but on the internet thread we have going on Democrat Underground. By the way, all the local folks, if you haven't gone to DemocratUnderground.com, DemocraticUnderground.com, it's a great site. Jeff from New York sent me this cartoon, and it shows the hearse with the soldiers putting the casket inside and Junior's down below slapping a Bush 2004 bumper sticker on it. It's a dandy. I had to laugh out loud when I saw that. But it's so true. It really is.
Oh, that is great. Well, I know that you've got some more callers waiting. I just wanted to call and say hey and tell you some thoughts I had on St. Ronnie's funeral.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. It's great to hear from you. And, of course, give Michael our regards.
Oh, I'll definitely do that.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Well, we've got John in Cape Coral right now. John, welcome to the program.
Well, I think some of the previous guests stole a little of my thunder, so I have to complain.
Oh, okay.
But she was excellent to her points. I mean, I listen to the local talk radio here for the people in your area, and I listen to Mr. Watkins all week long. And all it did was pander all week long to Reagan. I mean, it was, it never ended.
I know. I mean, people are dealing with the mythology, I want to call it, of the Reagan administration and completely overlooking the facts.
Well, I think that's really it's done for a reason, and I think it's premeditated. I think Stephanie hit on it. I think some of your other callers have hit on it. But I think it needs to be said very clearly. I think it's all part of the drive of the reelection campaign of W.
Oh, absolutely. John, you know as well as I do, you're a smart guy. How many people that don't pay any attention to politics whatsoever and probably don't vote, how many people sat home and watched that and went, oh, God, what a great man he was. They've said this and they've said that about him, and they have no idea as to the facts.
Well, he started something, and W is continuing it along, and we need W to continue the tradition that Reagan started, and we can't allow those evil Democrats to come in and do what Carter did or Clinton did. I had a question in my mind, though. Maybe you can answer it. If Jimmy, I'm not trying to ask anything, but I'm putting a hypothetical out. But if Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton died tomorrow, what kind of funeral would they have?
Well, first of all, I heard that that Bill Clinton didn't plan his yet. They're supposed to start planning it the year after they're out of office. But I have an idea that Jimmy Carter would be looking more like Harry Truman's funeral. You probably remember that, as I do. It was modest, but certainly modest. And some of these gentlemen, John, there wasn't anybody going to script a bigger, more lavish thing than Ronald Reagan and his family. I mean, there wasn't anybody going to.
No, I'm not. I think that's true. I think if something happened to W, what kind of a funeral would we have for him?
Well, I don't know.
Or are they even Bush Senior?
I don't know. I hope we don't have to see that for a long time. I don't have to see that in my
but,
lifetime.
But we're venerating these people.
Oh, yes.
And the one thing I remember that has not been drilled in about Reagan, and my opening impression of Reagan, and I happened to be up in New York at that time, and the union activist. And I remember the thousands of people that marched on Washington early on in his term of office because of the PATCO situation. And I remember after that meeting a gentleman who had been an air controller, very well-educated man, who, because he couldn't get a job, was reduced to becoming a school custodian cleaning floors. What Reagan did to these people and their union, and the breaking of unions has to be remembered.
Well, he pushed against unions as hard as anybody ever has. And, I don't, except for serving his corporate masters, what was his reason for that? He was a former union member.
I can't tell you the reason, but I can tell you the cause and effect, and it's hurt labor today, and it's hurt the American worker, and all those people who lost jobs, all these industries that have gone out of the country, and people forced to, get retrained, people who've lost pensions. All of this was in, coming from the Reagan years. The average Republican right-winger who looks at these people as gods forgets the fact that their economic status as individuals has deteriorated under these people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You couldn't be more correct on that.
And I don't look Reagan, I'm sorry, and I've said this, to me, he was not a hero. He was a person, you know, we had to go through. I mean, I still say for all the faults that he had, and he had faults in his personal life, we did better as individuals under the Clinton years than we have under the Bush or Reagan years or the current Bush years.
No question about it.
Well, when you say no question about it, Guy, how many of your listeners out there, especially the right-wing listeners, look to their own economics and realize it's you can't look at the guy previously in office and say he's responsible. It's the guy who's leading the ship, the captain of the ship today, who sets the standard.
Well, you know, John, it's so puzzling. I mean, here's a guy, a president, you know, here's a man who didn't discourage the South Africans from apartheid. Here's a man who dreamed up a Star Wars thing all by himself. Here's a guy that came up with the evil empire. You know, they sold weapons to the Iranian mullahs and lied about it.
By the way, do you know that during the Reagan years, there were boxcars full of American goods on the Soviet railroad lines? And you know how I know it?
Yeah.
Because I happened to travel in Russia in 1983, and I saw it for myself.
Wow.
I can personally attest to it.
Wow.
And that's not something I read. It's not something that I can tell you other than through first-hand knowledge of seeing it myself. And we were told on that time, I took the Trans-Siberian Express, we could not take pictures anywhere near that railroad line. They didn't want, and nobody, Russians, Americans, wanted it known how much we were shipping. I mean, here we're talking about this evil empire, Mr. Reagan is in office, and we were shipping them wheat and American goods and American boxcars that were on Soviet railroad lines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And well, that may not be a popular fact, but I can tell you I saw this for myself.
But when Ron Reagan got up and said the evil empire and blah, 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 it made good theater. John, thank you so much for your call.
And thank you for your show.
Thanks. Oh, who's up next here? I think we're going to go to Amanda.
Hi.
In Georgia. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
You did great on the Flanders show, by the way.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you did really good. Guy, I stumbled on something today that I wanted to bring up on your show that I think there's somebody to look into.
Okay.
There's something called a Blaine Amendment in the state of Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And our wonderful governor, Sonny Perdue, you know, the one who said shoot to kill down there at G8. The Blaine Amendment was named after Senator James Blaine of Maine. This man had wanted to propose and nearly pass an amendment to the Constitution prohibiting all forms of faith-based initiatives. But Georgia still, you know, at the time, had it. Well, the thing goes on to say that, you know, Perdue wanted Georgia to get step with the United States New Deal with faith-based initiatives. What I found interesting, and I'm very familiar with 501c, you're not supposed to be partisan in any way, shape, form, or fashion. You know that.
Yeah.
At the very end of this, it says, for more information, contact Georgia Republican Party. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, is there no faith-based initiative program? Now, here we've had Medicaid cut. We've had a lot of things cut. And is it only Republicans who are getting help, or is it only people of a certain faith that is getting in these programs? Because I don't see too many real poor Republicans in Georgia.
Well, you know, they're going to have to they're going to make it so they've got control of the whole thing. They've got control of people's religion. They've got, you know, you have to swear allegiance to your religion in order to be a, you know, to even vote some of these days. I think that's the way they're going to make it. They're trying hard to do that. By the way, speaking about voting, I don't know how many of you know this, but one of our top officials here in Florida resigned this week, and we're having that purge go on again. And they say, "Oh, don't worry about it. There's nothing to it." But Bev Harris knows better. This black box voting thing, you know, coming down to voting is turning into a crisis, and people better pay attention.
They really have. Beverly Harris has done a great job.
Absolutely.
Not even knows who Beverly is anywhere in the United States, and she's done a terrific job.
She sure has.
But this thing has really got me worried because, you know, since when with Purdue wanting to, you know, and there's plenty of faith-based organizations, and I can't see where any of it's working. And they're eliminating all social programs. There is this Blaine Amendment in the Georgia Constitution. And for more information, contact the Georgia Republican Party. Where is the nonpartisanship on a 501c faith-based organization?
Well, maybe somebody's got the answer to that. I don't.
Sure hope so. Listen, keep up the good work, Guy.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Right now, we're going to go to Martha in Bonita. Martha, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim. It's really good news, okay? You there?
I'm sorry. Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to you, Jim. Oh, no. I'm sorry. Sorry, Jim.
You tell you somebody else?
Yeah, I'm in a car full of people.
Okay.
I got a bunch of people from my club here. We're going over to the Florida Democratic Party, JJ Gala. Thank you, Jim. And anyhow, I want to tell you it's a really good day in America. You know why?
Why?
Because I talked to somebody who worked on Connie Mack's staff who came over. She crossed the fence. She helped to raise money for John Kerry. And she told me Southwest Florida is going for Kerry this year.
Well, I hope she's right on that. That'd be a modern day miracle, wouldn't it?
It would be a modern day miracle, but I think that's what we need to take care of George Bush.
Yeah, well, it could happen. You know, there's people getting very disenchanted with George Bush.
We had Republicans there. We had independents. We had a wonderful brunch with John Edwards here, right in the middle of so-called Republican bastion of the right wing conspiracy.
Sure.
And John Edwards spoke beautifully about the two Americas, that we've got to take care of each other, that we've got to look out for what America is doing to half of the other side of America, you know?
Right,
so
right.
We had a terrific time. We raised $250,000. I think the Republicans are going to be scared, and it's a great day for Southwest Florida. It's going to be a great day for America because we're going to help take Florida for John Kerry.
Well, we're certainly doing our folks. This place is energized. We're not messing around. It's energized, and part of the reason is Martha. Of course, she's out doing a great job for the Democratic Party. President of one of the local Democratic clubs, and the clubs are all growing by leaps and bounds. And yes, I know it's an election year, but there's a lot of excitement.
Yeah, it's true. And Guy, I just want to thank you so much for having this radio show because it's really helped people gather their thoughts. They're listening to the issues. You're broadcasting throughout the world, for God's sakes, but just here locally, it's such a blessing to us, and I just want to thank you so much. And our club has upped our donation to you monthly, and I just want to thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
For all the hard work you do.
Thanks,
okay,
Martha.
Talk to you later. Bye, honey.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
We're going to talk about some Democratic issues up here, and I'm going to make some Democrats mad right now. I am. I'm going to. I don't know how many, but I always tell you folks the truth on this show. Whether you like it or not, that's up to you. But I know there's some Democrats going to hear what I've got to say right now, and I've got to say it because it's bothering me, and I have to say it. So if you don't like it, why, I don't know what to tell you. But we're known for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on this show. And so here goes. How many of you know about Al Gore's remarks about Alex Pinellas? How many of you around the country know who Alex Pinellas is? He's the mayor of Miami, okay? We've got three people running for Bob Graham's seat. Bob Graham is retiring from the United States Senate. And we've got Betty Castor. We've got Peter Deutsch. And we've got Bob Graham and Alex Pinellas from Miami. Got those three people. Al Gore this week said that Alex Pinellas was the single most treacherous and dishonest person that he had to deal with during his campaign anywhere in America. Yes, he said that. And Al Gore said that because it's true. Al Gore is known for telling the truth. There are many, many, many things that happened back during the 2000 campaign that Alex Pinellas was supposedly going to help Al Gore over in the Miami area. He did nothing, zero, to help Al Gore in that campaign, and it was right there in his home city where he knew damn well that it was very important with the Cuban vote. Democratic fundraiser Mitch Berger. says he helped Pinellas raise money for his campaign. And yet Pinellas took the money and then disappeared like a thief in the night. That's what Mitch Berger said. Pinellas skipped Al Gore's vote drive. Pinellas was supposed to attend an event with Hialeah Mayor Raul Martinez. Pinellas blew it off. His excuse, he had to go home and pack for a trip to Spain. You know, they kept saying, well, there's no question Alex Pinellas is a part of the Gore campaign. That's what they were saying. But he goes to Spain right during the heart of it, and then he returns home 7 days before the election and goes into hiding. There's no evidence he made even a single statement on Al Gore's behalf anywhere. Spanish language radio, which is very important in Miami, or any other medium. And Pinellas' Senate campaign, by the way, can't produce a single instance of it either. So it does not exist. And the day before the election, Al Gore was barnstorming. They knew this election was close. They knew it was very close. They needed every vote. And so Al Gore barnstormed across Florida. And he arrived in South Florida for a huge midnight rally down on South Beach. It was filled with Gore supporters. Alex Pinellas didn't show up. And his excuse was, he said it was very late at night. And during the recount, Alex Pinellas was nowhere to be found. So I'm sorry if this makes some of you angry, if you're Alex Pinellas people, but I believe in telling the truth about it, and Alex Pinellas is not a Democrat. He claims to be a Democrat, and he turned his back on Al Gore as a presidential candidate back in the year 2000, made deals with Republicans in order to save his own skin in Miami, and he is not deserving of the seat in the United States Senate. So I want you, if you are thinking about voting for Mr. Alex Pinellas, I want you to look this over. I want you to find out the facts, and you'll find out that everything I said is absolutely true. And is that a man who deserves to be in the Senate of the United States getting the vote of Democrats? I don't think so. And you will find that Betty Castor and Peter Deutsch are two highly qualified people. I'm going to have a hard time making up my mind which one of them I want to vote for, because I had the opportunity to sit at the table with Betty a while back, and she's a brilliant woman. She's well-spoken. She's well-qualified for the seat. Peter Deutsch, he's been around a long time. He, too, is well-spoken and qualified. So I'm sorry. I had to say it. It's true, and I'm probably going to take some flack about it, but we said all that's left is the truth on this program, and that's what you're going to get, and that's what you just got. Going to go back to the phones right now. We're going to go to Juan in Fort Myers. Juan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Guy. I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to talk about something else, but I think you hit the nail on the head with Alex. That radio, Spanish radio station down there, is I believe is the most listened radio talk show. And mostly it's a talk show, had very little music in the state of Florida. He would have been able to help Al Gore during the election, no doubt.
Only had to change a couple hundred votes.
Yeah, and the thing is that I think he won a Republican president because he's a Republican president, puts a squeeze on Fidel Castro, and he depends on the vote, so the community supports him, so long as he supports anybody that will go after, you know, enforcing the embargo, making the embargo worse, the traveling to Cuba. So he, I think he was a turncoat during that election. I believe that. That was a shame because he hurt the entire country for his own political gain.
If Alex Pinellas would have done what he should have done, if he had done his duty as a Democrat, Al Gore would be in the White House today.
He would have been a slam dunk, no doubt. There's about a million Cuban-Americans there. He sure enough would have taken 200 votes that way, or 500, whatever it was.
Yep.
The reason I call is, the reason I listen to you, your entire show, is that you tell the truth, and you know, you don't spin things, and I think that's why the Republicans don't, the extremists don't call in, and because they can't stand they have the light shined on them. You explain things very well, anyway, the reason I was calling was that the local Republican Party here in Southwest Florida made a very cynical statement, in my opinion, on the radio this week. They said that the Republican, they say that Ronald Reagan's policies were the, responsible for the increase in Republican voters. And to me, that is the farce, because most people didn't understand the policies. Most people did not know what was going on. The reason they voted for him, because he was a comedian. I mean, anybody that listened to that hour and a half of jokes that he was, you know, that he was telling here, that was published here, or not published, I'm sorry, was on the radio here. It was just jokes. He was a well-liked man. I liked him, but, you know, I thought of him as an Andy Griffith with a sense of humor.
In the front of the cameras, he was great. He was.
Yes, exactly. I think that, that he was a liked man, and a lot of people in the middle vote for a person that's likable, like they did for John Kennedy. They didn't understand a lot of his policies either, but he was, he was well-spoken like Reagan, and so that's what made the day, and that's and gained the votes for those of those people. But for the Republican Party knows better, and they are, in my opinion, spinning the truth. And because they have no proof that the policies did anything. Let's see.
I absolutely agree. There are people that are terribly uninformed that go out and vote because a guy called a good joke or seemed nice on the TV, and that's no reason to vote for anybody.
I was going to mention that I listened to Rush because I knew he couldn't help but be partisan and use this as political gain for the political fodder for the. For his party, he said that Clinton was asleep during the speech there at the I think the president was taking George Bush Jr. But maybe he was asleep, but who wouldn't fall asleep? When this guy is talking, I can't remember anything he said.
He's put me to sleep a time or two.
Yes. but, just one last thing. The other reason I was going to call is that I really, was pleased what Ron Jr. said, and, about not wearing the religion on your sleeve. And I think not only was that was a good eye-opener for the President of the United States, but also for the extremist religious groups that are trying to insert religion in the country. It doesn't in the policies of this country. It doesn't belong there.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Juan. Thanks for your call. Great call as usual. Going to go to. By the way, you can call us 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. We've got a couple lines open right now. We're going to go to Alan in Fort Myers. Alan, welcome to the show. Are you there, Alan? I think, let me try pushing this button again. Alan, are you there? Guess not. I guess he got tired of waiting, had to wait a long, long, long time. Anyway, Alan, if you're listening, give us a call back or else answer the phone. I'll give it one more shot here. Alan, are you there? No, he's not. All right. So, anyway... if you've got some issues about what all that went on this week with the Reagan funeral and so forth and all the pomp and ceremony that went on, do give us a call. There's lots to talk about. And if you're someone on the right that enjoyed every bit of it and thought that it was fair media coverage, give us a call. Let's discuss it. I don't think I've ever seen anything slanted so much. And again, let me state for those of you who haven't heard the whole program, I believe that being an ex-president for two terms, and despite getting elected over trading arms for hostages, he did serve two terms in the United States as a president, and he was entitled to lie in state, he was entitled to the military funeral, he was entitled to all that. And I make no... no statement that said he wasn't. He was entitled to that, and every president that is invited deserves that. Going to go to Juanita in Florida. Juanita, welcome to the show.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
I wanted to tell you something I had saved about Ron Reagan Jr. This was from last year. You remember when Buchanan and Press had a show on MSNBC?
Yes.
And Reagan was on as a substitute for Bill Press. And he was talking to Ann Coulter, and it's just a few little lines here, but I think you'll appreciate it. He said, it's so easy to be a conservative on TV today. You can say pretty much any dumb thing you want, and people will say how entertaining. And then he's talking about where he talked to Ann Coulter, and he says, she says that liberals are all traitors. We don't read, and there was no McCarthyism. Well, it would take a good hour to sort of, you know, delve into all of that and refute it. But it's very easy to say something like that, so liberals have a higher standard. And then, of course, she says, oh, I'd like to see that. And then he says, that very conservative and author of the best-selling book, Treason, Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter, thanks for coming by. And he said, so I guess I'm a liberal, so does that make me a traitor? And she said, well, apparently the higher standard that you liberals have to live up to does not include reading a book before spouting off on TV about it. And he says, well, I think it was in your, I read it in the ad copy. And, of course, then she goes into a rampage about him not reading that. And he says, well, there's only about 24 hours in the day. And he says, your book is not on my agenda.
Yeah,
I thought,
well,
that was good.
You know, well, what happens there? She brings out a book, and Richard Mellon Scaife and the whole hardcore neocon gang go out and buy tons of them right away. She's a venomous, nasty woman.
She really is. I first got acquainted with her on Bill Maher's show when he had Politically Incorrect. And it seemed like he had all these blonde women that were vicious. I mean, she wasn't the only one, but she probably was the most memorable one.
Oh, you had the Laura Ingraham, and then the Solicitor General of the United States' wife. All of a sudden, I can't think of her name. She died in a plane crash that crashed into the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You know, yeah, there was the blonde crew there that. You know, of course, we call Ann the man Coulter.
Yeah.
The
one with the Adam's apple.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks so much for your call, Juanita.
You're
we do
welcome.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Going to go to Shannon in Naples. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Guy. Hey.
You'll have to speak up. I think we got a bad one here.
Okay, how's that?
A little better.
Okay. I just wanted to say that this whole week has been surreal for those of us who remember Reagan for his position on AIDS. And,
oh, yeah.
I was in college when the first cases started surfacing and watched a lot of friends die. And all week I've been seeing those faces. And I can't help but compare what he did to standing outside a burning building filled with gays, and he refused to yank the alarm because he felt those men didn't matter. So I just wanted to call in and say that that generation of young gay men are long dead, so I'll be the one to remind folks that Reagan forbade the use of the word gay in his cabinet, and when he finally did release a reputable amount of money to the CDC, it wasn't for research or to help the afflicted, it was to test. And the Reagan legacy for me is putting politics ahead of the health of his fellow Americans. So I'm just glad it's all over and he's finally up there, maybe meeting up with some of those young
Well, they say we all have to answer for our sins. And, you know, that was the statement he made. And I had it here someplace. I can't find it right now. But he really did say that, you know, the AIDS was their payback for their sin. And I paraphrased that. But I know I've got the meaning of it exactly right, and he did believe that.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he would have felt so strongly about it if he had actually maybe watched the sores come up on somebody or watched a mother bathe her son as he's dying. And
Exactly right.
Thanks
so much for your call, Shannon.
All right.
Do appreciate it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to talk about, and hey, if you watch this all week long, like I did, and I did take some respite from it now and then during the week. I had a chance to do some reading, but you couldn't get away from it. And I did watch it last night up till the sunset, and I have to admit, it was the finest scripted TV thing that I think I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen anything scripted so well, right up to the timing where the sun set, at the exact moment that they wanted it to. But the Reagans were TV people. They were movie people. They knew about the photo op. They knew how to plan a great production, and all power to them on that. They did a great job on it, and it's hard to imagine anybody doing a better job. But what do you think about the whitewashing? And that's exactly, to me, what it was. A lot of things were whitewashed this week, yes. We owed our respect during a time of mourning, and I think the liberal folks were, for the most part, for anything I've seen, were very respectful. And, you know, now it's over with, and now's the time to tell the truth, and now's the time to get on with it and explain to folks who got involved in this week and haven't been involved in politics that they're entitled to know the truth. And a lot of what was talked about this week on the air regarding Ronald Reagan's legacy was absolutely not the truth. It was embellished a great, great deal. And, of course, I'd say the biggest sin in the whole thing was the sin of omission. We didn't talk about the AIDS thing. We didn't talk about the Iran-Contra. We didn't talk about the homeless people. We didn't talk about the huge budget deficit. We didn't talk about the national debt going up to extreme levels. Didn't talk about any of that. All we talked about was the shining city on the hill, and that Ronald Reagan was somehow our savior, saved America from. I don't know what he saved America from. I really don't. Said he brought new hope to America. Didn't bring any new hope to me. I've always had hope as an America. Even as bad as things are right now, I have hope for America. I have hope because I'm pretty doggone sure come this fall, we're going to elect a new president of the United States. And he will take this nation in a different direction instead of trying to be the bully and, you know, spending all of our hard-earned money on the military and forgetting a lot of social ills that need to be addressed here in this country. There's a lot of that, and we need a new president. I think we're going to get a new president, and we're working hard toward that end. That's for absolute certain. You can call us at 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. And we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Guy James Show on 1200 AM WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida.
The Guy James Show. Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
More prisoners to be freed at Abu Ghraib. I'm Deirdre Bryant. Another 650 prisoners will be released from the notorious prison on Monday. More has been learned about military operations there. ABC's Barbara Britt reports.
The commander of U.S. forces in Iraq, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, gleaned methods of prisoner interrogation that were used at Guantanamo Bay, reports the Washington Post, allowing officers at Abu Ghraib to use tactics such as sensory deprivation, military dogs to provoke fear, temperature extremes, interrupted sleep patterns and diets of bread and water without first getting the approval of anyone outside the prison. A Defense Department spokesman did not defend the tactics, saying only a number of investigations at Abu Ghraib are underway. Barbara Britt, ABC News, Washington.
Iraq's deputy foreign minister was assassinated today, gunned down on his way to work. Bassem Salikuba was the top career diplomat in Iraq. Saddam Hussein loyalists are being blamed. The U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia is warning Americans to be extremely careful. An American man was shot and killed as he parked at his home in an upscale section of Riyadh. Bosnian Serbs have now admitted for the first time that 8,000 Muslim men and boys were slaughtered in a UN-declared safe zone nearly a decade ago. It was the Srebrenica massacre, Europe's worst since World War II. Nearly 5,000 victims have been found in mass graves. Bosnian International Administrator Patty Ashdown.
The dark cupboards that held the dreadful secrets of those who committed war crimes in Bosnia, let us remember they were on all sides, are beginning to be opened. It's an important moment for the nation.
Ashdown says the process of finding the truth must continue. President Bush devoted his radio address to former President Ronald Reagan, saying America is stronger and the world is freer because of his leadership. President Bush is spending the weekend in Texas. A portrait of former President Bill Clinton will be unveiled at the White House in a ceremony on Monday. The painting by Simi Knox, the first black artist to paint an official presidential portrait. This is ABC News.
All right, people, we need new computers, and they're pretty expensive, so we're cutting back. If you have to travel overnight, try sleeping in a park. Think of it as a business adventure. Next office supplies. Instead of using tape or glue, see if anyone's chewing gum. And yes, we're cutting toilet paper.
Looking for an easier way to afford the latest technology?
Sir, why aren't we just getting a Dell?
At DellRadio.com, you'll find great deals on PCs for your small business. Get everything from notebooks and servers to printers and PDAs to complement your PC purchase. Everything you need in one place.
Water, however, will still be available for a nominal fee.
Right now at DellRadio.com, you can get a Dell Dimension desktop with an Intel Pentium 4 processor for just $449 plus tax, monitor not included. Order select systems today and get a free flat panel upgrade and free 3 to 5 day shipping. DellRadio.com, just one more thing that's easy as Dell. Dell systems use Intel Pentium 4 processors.
Guy James, proud American patriot and host of America's number one Democratic talk show, brings his bold brand of liberal talk radio to Southwest Florida. Now, here's Guy James.
I invite you to join me every Saturday for a look at the way it really is. You've already heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth.
Guy James, every Saturday, 3 to 6, right here on Power Talk 1200. It's the Guy James Show.
Over $3 million of fine art, jewelry, Rolex watches, gold coins, Persian rugs, historical documents, luxury furs, collectibles, and bronze sculptures must be sold at liquidation auctions this Sunday, June 13th. United States Liquidators is auctioning original works of art by Pablo Picasso, Miro, Raoul Dufay, Mauricio Trio, Camille Pizarro, Louis Eichhardt, H. Behrens, Tarquet, H. Claude and Palomino Pizarro, Chimon and more. Original bronze sculptures by Angelo Basso, Arte and Dali. Over 20 Armani, Yadro, Hummel, and Zantini figurines. Over 200 lots of fine jewelry. Large certified diamond solitaires, 2 to 15 carats. Rolex Presidentials, Cartier, Patek Philippe, Piaget, and others. Masterpiece handmade rugs. Tabriz, Isfahan, Hashan, Herman, Paris, and more. All to be offered at auction this Sunday, June 13th in the Hilton Naples and Towers Naples. Preview at noon starts at 1 p.m. Most items sold with no minimum and no reserve. For information, call 1-800-738-6790. That's 1-800-738-6790. Let's face it, mold, mildew, and fungus on your roof is not only unsightly, it's a potential health hazard. DuraShield, an evolution in roofing protection, restores the original beauty of your expensive concrete or tile roof and prevents mold, mildew, and fungus from returning. Guaranteed for 7 years. For asphalt or fiberglass roofing, DuraShield will reduce granule loss as well as prevent the regrowth of mold, mildew, and fungus and will extend the life of your roof. If you're considering having your roof cleaned, don't pressure wash and damage your roof. Call DuraShield for a free no-obligation inspection and estimate at 574-2594. A professional representative will show you why DuraShield has protected nearly 20,000 roofs in the past 11 years and why once you see the difference, you'll never waste your money on pressure washing again. Protect your property by calling DuraShield for a free estimate at 574-2594. Call 574-2594 today.
Your weekend choice for Power Talk. This is Southwest Florida's Power Talk 1200 WPTK.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James with you. Back with you. Hope you're having a good day today, wherever you are. Yeah. It's awfully nice here. It's about 90 degrees outside. Sun is shining, and a beautiful day in Southwest Florida, and I hope it's great where you are as well. I heard some trouble with storms up in Nebraska and Kansas up that way today, so hope everything's all right with you up there. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. Give us a call. Love to hear from you about yay or nay, what you happen to think about the all the pageantry that went on this week and all the right-wing spin that went on this week and the whitewashing, and that's exactly what it was. 479-5540 if you're here in Lee County, or you can call us 263-6570 from Collier County. Going to go to Carl in Fort Myers. Carl, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mr. James.
Howdy.
Pleasure to talk to you. I agree with almost everything you've said about the Reagan legacy that they're putting forward. Because I voted for Reagan one time, and it was a huge mistake, and I readily admit that, the first time. And, you know, but what, you know, the pageantry that went on during the whole week was, to me, distasteful, because, you know, I saw John F. Kennedy shot, I remember where I was the day he was shot, and his funeral, and the day Lyndon Johnson died, and on and on. But, you know, I think they overdid this to a huge extent. And I agree with you that I think it's a campaign thing with the Bush administration.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and what galled me the most this week was I hear these right-wing pundits keep saying the greatest president of the 20th century, which is garbage.
Right.
The greatest president of the 20th century, in my opinion, was President Roosevelt.
Absolutely. I don't think any sane person can say anything different than that.
I don't either, because he came into office during a deep depression, 20-some million people unemployed, and I was a child at that time. You know, I don't remember all of it, but my father has told me about it, you know. And then he came into two wars, well, Japan and Germany,
right,
which were not pushovers.
Certainly
Germany
not.
Germany was the most powerful nation on earth at that time, militarily. And, you know, and he won both of them. And he defied a lot of the Supreme Court about some of his policies, you know, that he tried to institute to bring this country out of a depression. And I remember one famous statement he said. The Supreme Court ruled against him on, I don't know if it was a work program or what, I don't remember that part of it, but I remember him saying, "Well, you've made your decision, now enforce it."
Yeah.
And that, you know, he was a strong man, and he was in a wheelchair.
Yes, indeed.
He was a very brilliant man, and to compare Ronald Reagan to him is insane. It has no basis of fact. And, you know, it just galled me to keep hearing this over and over from Laura Ingraham and, you know, all these people.
Well, he's the one that is responsible for this rise of this neocon movement. And, you know, they've got to have a God to follow, and he was their God, and he's their political God. There's just no question about it, and he could do no wrong, never. And this week was, it was the greatest whitewash job I think I've ever heard. All due respect to the former president.
Oh, I respect him too, you know. But it was like they've carried this to the most extremes.
Oh, yeah.
And I just heard on the news that they've released 300 or 600 some prisoners from the prison in Iraq. And the other day they released, or a couple of weeks ago they released 300. Now, obviously, this is people that shouldn't have been there.
Sure.
You know.
Many, many.
And you know, so that's roughly 1,000 people they've released. That what they're really admitting is, well, we didn't need them there anyway.
But wasn't this good all week to have all the Iraqi news off of the the scandal that went on over there? All that was whitewashed away from the news this week, so he got a free ride for this whole week.
Of course he did, you know, and it's like I said, I think it's a campaign thing, and I loved your quote about the cartoon. That was, I don't know who thought that up, but that was very good. But anyway, one other thing, that if there are prisoners in that Iraqi prison that are, you know, really should be interrogated, I have a solution for them. Take John Hannity's shorts, dirty ones, Laura Ingraham's panties, and the other blonde, whatever her name is, dirty ones, and threaten them with them. I guarantee they will talk quickly.
They'll talk quickly. Hey, Thanks so much for your call. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Let's see. We're going to go to Ryan. Is it Ryan in Cape Coral?
Yes. Good afternoon, Guy. Thank you so much for your show. You know, I was really appalled this week of this coverage for Reagan. You know, these right-wingers, they're total revisionists. They rewrote history. And, I mean, they made this man out to be a saint and some god, which he was not. And, you know, I remember very well that Iran Contra thing. And do you remember when Nancy Reagan came on television and said, just say no to drugs, say no to drugs? And at the same time, the Reagan administration, through their shadow government, was bringing drugs into the cities of the United States, and in exchange for the drug money, they were going and funding the Contras down in Nicaragua and were killing hundreds of thousands of people, all the lies about how the commies are going to be on our back doorstep and everything else. I mean, it was shameful what he did. It was also shameful that Reagan went to Bitburg and planted a wreath and honored the Nazi war dead at Bitburg, at that cemetery. Did he not plant a wreath there?
Yes, he did.
Yes, I mean, that was shameful. Any World War II veteran that would vote for him was simply, I tell you what, simply out of touch with reality. Not only that, but it's like that one other caller brought up before the time of Reagan. I'm old enough to remember when this country was altogether different. And before the time of Reagan, there were very few homeless, maybe a few alcoholics or something, but after Reagan was and these neocon cutbacks, and this all started with him. Reagan is the one that really brought back the Gilded Age, and I can't stand people who make him out to be some kind of god or hero, which he certainly was not.
Well, you know, history's going to have to decide, and I think history's going to... it's going to take a while, but I think the truth will be written sooner or later.
Well, I agree with you, Guy. I really do. And, you know, one other thing, you know, did I bring that up? Do you remember when he also made those insane, crazy statements that trees cause a lot of pollution?
Oh, yeah.
When he wanted to destroy the environment? He put a nut in there like James Watt that made the statement that, oh, God would want us to take down all the natural resource and cut down all the forest because Armageddon's coming anyway. I mean, that Reagan was the start of this right-wing, neocon, anti-intellectual religious movement in this country, and it is very frightening. It
yep.
really is.
Well, we hope to get out of the clutches
yeah.
of that through this next election.
Well, I sure hope so, Guy. And one last quote I'd like to make, and this comes from an English writer by the name of John Stuart Mill in the 18th century, and he said... it is not true that all conservatives are stupid, but it certainly can be said that most stupid people are conservatives. And I think I'll get you with that one, Guy.
Thanks so much for your call, Ryan.
Thank you very much. You have a good day. Okay.
Oh, that's a beauty.
I love it.
Yeah.
You have a good day now,
thanks.
Guy. Okay, goodbye now.
Well, let's see who's been waiting the longest. Going to go to George in North Fort Myers. George, welcome to the show.
Hey, Guy. How are you?
Okay.
Hey, love the program. Just a hoop today. Hey, on this thing with Reagan, what a week, huh? Oh, my goodness. Boy, the pomp and circumstance, you know, the celebration of a great American. Yet you're upset because something was omitted as far as the Reagan history.
Most of it was omitted.
Like what?
The homeless people.
The homeless people?
Yeah.
So the homeless people were omitted?
It skyrocketed during his administration because they cut the...
Statistically, that's absolutely absurd. There's no statistical information to back that up. Now, if you can provide us with some, that would be cool.
Have you got your $10,000 again ready?
Well, as soon as you come up with the Wall Street Journal article that had the point that you had addressed, that you stated as fact and addressed, and I'll come up with it.
Have you got your $10,000 again ready? How about the budget deficit? How about the budget debit? How about the voodoo economics? How about the average man, his wages gone to hell in the handbasket? How about Manuel Noriega? How about falling wages? How about the HUD scandal? How about the Iran-Contra affair? Don't call me and tell me this man was, his record was great. They left out all the bad stuff and mentioned a few good stuff for him this week. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. And if you're not aware of that, you are blind. Just plain blind. I'll tell you what. They left out three-quarters of the man's record. And there's no defense of it. No defense on some of those things. The Iran-Contra affair, like I said when I opened the program today, if anybody else had pulled off that sort of thing, it had been thrown out of thrown right out of Washington, D.C. But they didn't have the guts to do it to Ronald Reagan because he was spawning this new conservative movement. It wasn't a new conservative movement. It was a movement that had been planned for years, and it was the culmination of all their efforts that came true during the Ronald Reagan administration. You can call it what you want to, but we're going to tell the truth on this program. And if you want to ignore all of the public housing cutbacks during it, you know, how about the ketchup being called a vegetable in the school lunch program? How about colluding with the Guatemalan thugs? How about the couple hundred thousand people dying for the Arms for Hostages deal down in Central America? How about the toast to Ferdinand Marcos? How about his statement that most of the homeless were homeless by choice? Come on. No one can seriously say. How about, you know, they talk now about being soft on terrorism. We had 239 dead U.S. troops in Beirut. What did we do? We turned around and left. We didn't do anything about it. They reduced food stamp reductions. He came up with this welfare queen thing. It was strictly something in his imagination. That we had all these welfare queens running around with 12 kids and so forth. And they were all black, of course. There were more white people drawing welfare than there were black. There's facts to back all that up, but you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it. How about Robert Bork? How about SDI? The biggest folly that there ever was. Absolutely the biggest folly there ever was. Do you realize the night he talked about the Star Wars thing, that all the generals in the military looked at each other and went, what the hell is he talking about? Because they didn't know. Did you know he dreamed that up himself? And how many billions of dollars have been spent on it to this day, and where does it stand? Nowhere. Back to the phone, we got Paul. Well, do we have Paul in Fort Myers?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just want to correct one thing. A fella called in a little while ago saying that Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers. I remember that very well, and had a friend that was an air traffic controller, and they chose, he said, listen, you fellas, go back to work or I'm going to replace you.
That's right.
He was a man of his word, and they didn't go back to work, and he replaced them.
It was an illegal strike. They were not allowed to strike. The facts they were the only union that backed him during his campaign, and they didn't think he'd do it, and he did.
He was a man of his word, wasn't he?
Well,
the right can't stand a man that's the right. I mean, the left can't stand a man that stands up and says something and sticks with it. And a half an hour, and you've been spouting off and saying things that are very hard to counter, because you know, that was just one of the things I happened to know. I happened to have worked down there in South and Central America,
mm-hmm.
and I know that things are a lot better after Reagan left office.
So you think the Arms for Hostages thing was a good program?
Where the arms went and the way it wound up, it came out fine.
So you can deal with terrorists and the Iranians. You can deal with them and then get the money and buy weapons. That's all okay, especially when the Congress expressly forbade doing that. Is that okay with you?
I don't know that that's the way it worked.
That's exactly the way it worked.
I don't believe it worked that way.
It is the way it worked. The Congress had expressly forbid them to do that, and they did it anyway.
He did a lot of things that people don't even know about. I read...
What are those things?
Well, one of them was, for instance, during the Cold War, the Russians were trying to steal our pipeline secrets. You know, it's very difficult to pump oil from the North Slope of Alaska through that cold country. It has to stay warm and under very extreme pressures. And he found out that their spies were trying to buy that technology. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, let's sell it to them. And he sold it to them with a critical flaw in some of the software.
Well, wasn't that smart?
When they went to work, copying our secrets, they said when that pipeline blew up in Russia, you could see it from the satellite. I thought that was that.
There's only one problem with that whole story. Russians, sure the Russians were the Russians it. Were already pumping oil in the cold climes of Siberia and so forth. They had the technology before we did. That whole story. That whole story is absolutely bogus, Paul.
Why did they buy our software and let our spies sell it to them, and then it turned out that their pipeline blew up?
We didn't have any such software at the time.
You know that you always come up with facts that you can't back up.
No, I didn't bring this up. You did.
Know that we didn't
you
have
did.
That software.
You brought this up. I didn't bring it up.
Well,
prove it. Give me a source.
Can you?
Give me a source, Paul. Give me
I
a source.
Can't do it, neither can
you're
you.
Not going to call this
half
show and get away with saying
half,
something without a source. You've got to have a source, or you're not going to get away with that. You're just not going to get away with calling this show and giving us a cock and bull story like that, that he was selling computer software back at the beginning of the Reagan administration about some pipeline thing when the Russians were already pumping oil through coal. We learned most of what we had from them. But it's amazing the lengths people will go to try and prove a point, to try and prove this guy did something that he didn't do. That's a new one, I got to admit. I never heard that one before, and even after 24/7 coverage all week long this week, still never heard that. Still never heard that all week long. I wonder, Paul, why they didn't say that all week long? Why did nobody say that all week long? Why didn't anybody say that all week? Is Paul still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. But
why are you the only one that brought up that story this week? 24/7 coverage on the air, and you telling me none of those people knew that story?
You're the only one that brought up some of the other stuff.
Paul, I am not the only one that brought up the only thing. Everybody, you know, it's like trying to argue with a brick. You're the only one that ever mentioned that story in 24/7 coverage of Ronald Reagan this week, not another story. I mentioned Manuel Noriega. That's a fact. I mentioned his toast to Ferdinand Marcos, a fact. I've mentioned the largest budget deficits in history. I mentioned the national debt going up a tremendous amount. That's
not
a fact.
Not all those things are bad. Not all the result of what he did turned out bad.
You mean
in
spending...
In your eyes it did. In your eyes it did. You have this venomous hate for the right.
I don't have hate for the right. Who's got the hate? Have you ever heard Michael Savage? Have you ever heard Laura Ingraham?
We're talking about you, not Michael Savage.
You haven't heard any hate from me. You never heard me say I hate somebody. Never. Never. You're starting to sound like a real fool, Paul, because I never...
I don't hear Michael Savage say any hate to anybody either. Have you heard him say hate to anybody?
I heard Michael Savage this week say that all liberals... I want to get this exactly right... That all liberals were dirty communist bastards. That's an exact quote from Michael Savage. Dirty communist bastards. The members of MoveOn.org and liberals, that's what they are. How about that? Have I ever said anything like that?
You probably took it out of context.
No. How can you take that out of context? Members of the liberals and MoveOn.org are dirty communist bastards. Have you heard me say anything like that?
No, not about the
absolutely
communist.
Not. Paul, you've worn out your welcome. You're not making any sense. We're going to move on to Debbie in Naples. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Hi, guys. I haven't had a chance to talk to you in about a year. I think I was one of your first listeners.
Yeah.
And I used to have some interesting conversations with you and Mike, and I'm home during the summer, so I have time to make a couple calls. And I kind of feel like I'm one of the more rational people on the right side, and sometimes I like to call you and discuss a couple things. And with regards to the Ronald Reagan situation and kind of tying that into George W. Bush, and I can't say I can back this up with facts other than that I've recently, because of some family situations, had opportunity to speak with a lot of family members. There's just some stuff going on right now, and we've had some political conversations, and not everybody in my family is a conservative Republican by any stretch. Believe me, there's plenty of people on the left in my family, and every single one of us is doing better under George Bush as president. And I don't understand who all these people are that call your show that talk about all the gloom and doom that's going on economically in this country, because none of us see it.
You don't?
No, and we're in all different lines of work. Everybody's either gotten promotions or new jobs or raises. I have school teachers, government employees, people people in the technology industry, retail workers, all different kinds of people in my family. And when I sit down and I think about it, every single one of us is doing better now than we were 3 years ago.
That's an amazing story.
And I don't think we're the only ones.
I think you are.
I don't. And I tell you why I don't. Because do you have any idea? I'm in the retail business. Do you have any idea how high up retail sales are in the past year and a half? Across the board in every segment of retail?
Well, they just about had to be up in the last year and a half, didn't they?
No. Over 99. Because that's all taken out.
Things don't stay static. You know, when time passes on, things go up.
I understand that, but we're talking about increases in department store chains. We're talking like 70% and 80% increases.
We're talking about big companies. They're squeezing the little guys out of business.
No, I'm a little guy. Believe me, I'm a little guy. I have a retail store. My sister up in Connecticut has a retail store. I have family members that have stores out in Colorado. We're little guys.
Well, I can tell you this much, Debbie. The circle of people I run with are all retail owners. Almost exclusively.
In Florida? Absolutely, in Florida.
And I can tell you almost every one of them, Republicans included, are not doing well right now.
That's very interesting because I got to tell you something. I do the buying for the store that I have, and I meet with sales reps every day. And right now we're doing buying for the fall and holiday season. You cannot get in your booth at trade shows. So maybe the people you know are doing something wrong, but I got to tell you something. There is a lot of energy behind the economy right now. There are people spending. There are people buying. There are buyers that are extremely optimistic about the holiday season for this year. And I don't understand. I mean, maybe I just hang out with people who are in a better frame of mind, but listening to your show sometimes, it's very depressing to me because I feel like you're living in a completely different America than I am.
Well, I don't think I am, and I talk to people every day, and I have the exact opposite stories of what you have to tell. So I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree on that.
I understand, and I look forward to speaking with you more this summer.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
We're going to go to Eleanor in Bonita. Eleanor, welcome to the show. Are you there?
Hello.
You're going to have to speak up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm suffering a bit of a cold.
I'm sorry. We can't hear you, Eleanor. We're going to go to Kelly in California. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. It's been a while since I called in, but I've been listening pretty regular.
Well, good.
I'm in the middle of doing a pile full of paperwork here so that I can go on my summer vacation. And I wasn't really planning to call in, but then I heard your previous caller say something, and I couldn't help myself. I just had to.
Well, go right ahead. let me preface what you're going to say, that I know somebody very well in retail business. We went to a large, huge distributor over in Miami this week, and my friend was lamenting the fact that business is so bad, and the distributor, this is something everybody buys, the distributor says, let me tell you, everybody coming in is singing the same story. Everybody. So, you know, I don't know what else to say.
Well, you can correct me if I don't remember exactly what she said about this, because I don't want to misquote her at all.
Said her whole family was doing better since...
Well, the quote had to do with how she's even hearing from how much better things are for teachers. Did she say that?
I'm not sure about teachers.
I heard the word teachers in there, and that's when I kind of froze up and reached for the phone.
Well, tell us, how much better are things for teachers?
I would love to tell you about that, Guy. Because
And you're not even in Florida.
No, I'm not in Florida. I'm in California, and my school year isn't over. It's not over till this Tuesday. But I've been in public education since 1983. This has been the worst year I have ever experienced in my life.
And why?
Well, they started by cutting all administrative services down to a skeleton crew over at our district office. But many of those jobs are mandated. We have all of the funding that comes into public education comes in certain entitlements, and there's certain requirements. There's a lot of documentation, a lot of paperwork, and a lot of requirements you have to meet to get each little pocket of funding that pays for public education. So what they did is they looked at our contract, which says other duties as necessary, and they gave us extra duties, and we have been running the whole district office in groups of committees to take the place of all the people that they have laid off. I have worked not less than 12 hours a day every day this year. I was at work yesterday from 7 a.m. until 8:30 p.m. I'm worn out. I'm exhausted. I'm burnt out. I'm frustrated. And I just sat in a budget meeting last Friday that said, guess what? Next year it's worse. Next year you don't get any copies. Next year you don't get any supplies. Next year you better be doing fundraisers if you expect to pay for any pencils or paper.
Well, you know, Kelly, I have to, you know, I have to bring this up that we've had this No Child Behind Act. What gives here? Things must be rosy in the educational field.
You had to bring that up, didn't
yes.
you? No Child Left Behind. Oh, boy. Well, that's a really long conversation. If you know anything at all about standardized testing, you would know that the whole thing was bogus from day one. You would know that the testing portions that have just about destroyed public education were simply clones of what Pete Wilson did in California, what George himself did in Texas, what Jeb has done in Florida, which is basically set up statistically to guarantee that you're going to fail and they can take you over and privatize you. Because statistically, the way they are crunching those numbers will not stand up. In the beginning, I kept asking, with our AYPs and our continuous improvement model, I kept going back to what my professor had told me in my original psychological measurement course in college, where we learned about the kind of tests that they use and the way norm-referenced and criterion-referenced scores are done, and I kept thinking, this doesn't sound right. And I went back to my professor, because he's local, and I said, can they do this? Is this valid? He said, no, they can't do it. It's not valid. But it sounds good, and not very many people out there are statisticians. They don't understand it. So then I went to my principal, and I said, what are they doing with these test scores? This doesn't make any sense. It's mathematically corrupt. And he patted me on the head and said, I can't explain it to you, but I know that those test gurus know what they're doing.
Well, that's comforting.
Oh, yes, it was. And then I contacted a few other people, a PhD in statistics and another PhD in psychology that uses all of these kinds of tests. And I sat in on a conversation between them, and they argued and argued and argued. I listened to them argue for an hour about what these tests are actually measuring and whether or not any of those measurements actually mean anything. And they couldn't come to agreement on what the test actually measured, but they both agreed that the actual numbers involved in the test they aren't measuring learning. They aren't measuring student progress. One of the things that we do know, and we knew it long before No Child Left Behind, that the greatest correlation, the single biggest factor to predict how a child is going to do on that test is socioeconomic, parent education level, and income level. It's not how the kids are doing in school. It's parent education and income level. And those are the kids that are always in the lower group.
Well, it's a complicated issue.
It's a complicated issue, but in the meantime, we've been beaten into being afraid to do anything in
sure.
our room that doesn't have to do with the standard. We have principals who march around, and when they come into the room, they not only want to see whichever little standard that you're supposed to be teaching on the wall, but they expect the child to be able to recite it to them randomly.
Sure. Now, Kelly, we got to get it fixed. We got to get a new president.
And I just want to let you know that us teachers, we're not doing better under George W. Bush. We're not happier.
I know some folks that aren't either. So, hey, Kelly, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Oh, let's see here. Who do we have waiting the longest? I got to get to Republican Love if I can. We got Charles in Sanibel. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hey, Guy. Good to hear you. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Wonder Woman and her retail family on somehow bucking the trend. I wish I had that sort of success in the face of not real positives. I think the main strategy for the Democrats right now is to. Well, we've seen the pomp and circumstance, you know. We've seen it in a caller described it as surreal, everything that's going on. And I really find it that way. We haven't seen Reagan for 10 years, and now he's been on the news 24 hours a day for 5 days now, and I still haven't seen him. You know, we followed this box back and forth, and it's just been surreal to me.
It was.
But
certainly was.
The strategy now is really to get back to the this situation that's really caused us so many problems in the world, and that's that Iraq, and specifically the abuse in the prisons. This thing does go higher in the chain of command, and there's been some stories come out recently that you don't hear about because of the Reagan situation, because of the Reagan funeral. And we really need to focus on the fact that whether it was condoned or authorized, or whether they just had a general policy, let's soften up these prisoners, and then turn their head to what was going on. You know, whether it was any of those things, that's really the issue at hand. And the reason why it's such an important issue is I've noticed that this administration and the people that support it really use laws and follow laws only as far as they help them. In other words,
sure,
this this doesn't apply, they say a lot of times.
Exactly right.
He's a war criminal. This does not apply. He's a enemy combatant. I love that one.
Right.
And whether he's a citizen of this country or not,
they've twisted and turned, and you know, it's
dangerous.
It is dangerous. A dangerous path. It definitely is. Charles, thanks so much for your call. I got a whole bunch of people waiting, and please keep listening and call us any old time. Going to go to Rob in Fort Myers. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. How are you today?
Good.
I'd just like to kind of say something real quick, kind of a rebuttal to the lady that's having the wonderful life in her retail situation.
Mm-hmm.
I gather she's not a veteran like myself or a disabled veteran, but what she needs to do is to drive down to the Fort Myers VA clinic on any given day, or actually go to Bay Pines up in St. Petersburg and ask the veterans how much better their life has been in the last 3 years. And see how their benefits have been cut and are going to be cut, and things just keep being pushed further and further and further away from them.
Oh, I tell you, this is
is the truth, God. That is statistical.
It's a sad, sad story.
You can go out and look at it and find it.
You know, George Washington, I think it was. I wish I had the quote here, but I read a quote by George Washington this week talking about how competent your military was going to be in the future depended solely on how well you took care of the veterans of past wars.
Well, I can tell you it's gotten worse.
And, you know, they've pulled the plug on, it's costing more money. It's a sad state of affairs, especially for an administration that talks about wanting to be really good with the military. They've
exactly.
forsaken the veterans. That's a fact.
Exactly. And what I don't understand is, out of all the cuts, like I said, that young lady and other people may be having a good time. You know, things may be good, but in my own right, I'm thankful I am a veteran. I wouldn't even have health care because the government's sure not going to do it for me.
Yeah.
But what I have to go through each time, which is usually every week, and the paperwork and the put-off and everything else, you just deal with it. But it's gotten worse since Bush, and it's only going to get worse because more has been cut.
Rob, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Your enlightenment on the situation. It's a situation that the public needs to take a good look at and see what's really happening instead of the propaganda that's out there. Appreciate your call.
Thank you,
guys. Say, everybody's on the phone. We got all the buttons lit up. Hang on just a second. I want to tell you about some friends of mine here just for a second or two. You know, there's nothing like a neighborhood bookstore, and some of the big guys try to recreate them or to minimize them. Even the internet tries desperately to create a virtual copy, but neither comes close. One of our favorites is the oldest bookstore on Sanibel Island, the McIntosh Bookstore. It's a genuine old-fashioned neighborhood bookstore, a store that in too many towns is now only part of the museum's historic town exhibit, but on Sanibel, it's a real, thriving, not virtual, a flesh-and-blood store. McIntosh is operated by Jim Dowling, a lifetime student of literature, a young fellow who's unique as the store itself. The first step inside tells you that this is someplace special. Maybe it's the aroma of the old wooden floors and first edition books, or maybe it's the wide variety of titles and subjects you have to choose from. Also nestled on those old shelves are the latest books on both sides of the political debate. One can find authors of current progressive writings as well as those on the other side of the fence. Currently, for our listeners, they're carrying Molly Ivins and Michael Moore and Al Franken and Jim Hightower and all the rest that you've heard about with the big selling books. There's also bestsellers for easy summer reading, children's books, gifts and cards, and McIntosh is the place for books on nature, birding, and Shelley. If you can't find it anywhere else, you can usually get it at Macintosh, and you can order online at www.sanibelbooks.com. So stop by. If you don't buy anything, that's okay. You're always welcome to come in and take a look at a real bookstore. That's the Macintosh Bookstore at 2365 Periwinkle Way at Sanibel, Florida. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank some folks who contribute to the program. Sue Stroh, Bill Beaumont, Carolyn Dushke, Bobby Kaz, Barbara Presnell, the Democratic Club of Cape Coral, Chris Kern, William Sherrill, Marianne Kilgannon, the Shell Point Village Democratic Club, Martha Simons, Vince DiAmici, Patrick O'Sullivan, thank you so much. Elizabeth Harlow, thank you so much. John and Maggie Dowling, and Sindel Thiramurthy, we thank all of you folks for your kind donations to the show. That's what keeps us on the air. We do appreciate it. Got to get back to the phone. Got lots of people waiting and not much time. We're going to go to John in L.A. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. How are you doing?
Speak up if you can, John.
Okay. How are you doing, Guy?
Good.
I just wanted to rebuttal also that that woman that called and said everything is going good. You know, I work with my uncle at a furniture store here, and 4 years ago we were having $4,000 days. Now we're down to $400 days if we're lucky. And, you know, the economy is not thriving. You go to a fast food restaurant, it's full of adults working, and it's summer when, you know, it would be high school kids normally. And so this woman is one that's in a different world.
Well, I'm glad for her. I mean, I'm glad things are good for her and her family, but it's certainly not indicative of what's going on in this economy.
Right. I agree, but that's all I wanted to say. But
thank you, John, and thanks so much for listening. A good call, and you're right. I think you're expressing the opinion of most of the folks that I've heard from anyway. And, John, thanks so much for your call.
No problem. Thank you,
Guy. Next on the line, we've got... who do we have? We've got Nick in Naples. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Guy. Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
Hi. Your understanding of President Reagan is understandable. Reagan was an American president. Question for you, Guy. Have you ever considered yourself an American?
How do you mean that?
Well, as you know, you're a leftist, and there are no leftist Americans.
That's just one of the idiotic statements that the people from the hate-filled left like to talk about. That's what you hear from, you heard that one particularly from Michael Savage and from Neil Bortz. I could cite you many, many, many cases of what those guys have said that. You know, it's sad when you can't think for yourself and you just have to parrot what you've heard on hate-filled right-wing radio. It's really sad. It really is. Going to go to... who do we got? We got Scotch in Fort Myers. Scotch, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I just like to remind you guys that Reagan's hero happened to be Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
I would like everybody to remember.
An extremely liberal guy.
Yeah.
And the lady who said that her business was good, this may be, but... You know, when Reagan brought us out of that recession that Carter supposedly had gotten us into, there's only one way to get the people out, and that is to borrow money, to get more money in circulation, which Reagan did by quadrupling our debt.
Yep.
And also, that's what's happened now with the Federal Reserve lowering the interest rates. It puts more money in circulation. It's bound to catch up. However, it's a hidden tax because we have unrealistic inflation, which I don't think a lot of people realize that's what we're having right now. They just can't see it.
Sneaking right in the back door.
That's right. But I don't know why that woman in California is upset with Bush for the teachers out there. He's not supposed to be involved in education anyway. The federal government's not. And the only gripe that she really has is that the government's not stealing from somebody to give to her, to make her job easier, which is a very selfish thing to do. And whenever somebody gives an educational program money, you know they're going to control it.
They're going to try.
You're going to hear one side of history. You're going to hear one side of a political idea. And look at everything we got now. If you ever hear anything about school, we're going into, you've got to volunteer for everything.
Sure.
Did you ever read about that in 1984?
Oh, sure. It's a volunteer deal now. All these bake sales and things that people have to buy books for the kids in school.
Hey, I had to buy my own books, and you did, too, when you went to school, didn't
you? Right. That's right.
Did it hurt you?
No, I lived through it.
Yeah, you lived through it.
Somehow learned a thing or two.
I don't know why I should buy your books.
Well, I never, Scott, I don't recall asking you to buy my books now, did I? I'd already had my books.
That's what you're asking me to do now.
Well, so you want to do away with public education?
I think it would be a heck of a good thing to do, because if people didn't want to read, right now what we've got are kids with diplomas who can't read.
Oh, that's for certain.
Yeah.
That's for certain.
And we're spending a lot of money on it.
I think it's a system that's broken and needs to be fixed. And there are some government regulations on schools right now that are making it tough for the schools to live with that we could back off some.
And don't forget, all of those regulations were probably made by Democrats.
Oh,
liberal people.
I don't know. We've got these tests now with the No Child Left Behind Act and so forth. It was not a Democratic thing. So
it wasn't.
That was
put on there by liberals. I don't care if they were in the administration or if they were not in the administration and were just working in the administration, but they were there and they were all liberals. That's an extremely liberal idea.
Well, it was passed. It was Bush's baby. He passed it and he got it going. Hey, Scott, I've got to move on. I thank you for your call. I appreciate your call very much and I value your opinion. We're going to go to Vern in Naples. Vern, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy.
Hi.
I was just listening to your last caller. And if it wasn't for the liberals, where would he be?
Well,
I'd like to ask that question. And not only that, in the Bush administration, or the Reagan administration, that trickled down economics, they cut back on all the state funding, and Bennett and Alexander cut back on education, and that's why the education is the way it is today, because they cut back on all funding to the states. And when you cut back funding to the states, this guy doesn't realize it, all our real estate taxes go up. Because
absolutely,
somebody's got to pay for it. And the same guy that was doing all the yakking must be awful rich. Because, you know, if he wants to pay high real estate taxes, fine. I don't. So, this is what I can't get over with some of these guys that talk about the great president that Ronnie was. Ronnie was a good B actor, but he wasn't a good president.
Well, I didn't think so either. We'll certainly agree on that. With all due respect to an ex-president of the United States, the lying in state and the funeral and all, that was fine with me. I resented the right-wing media taking terrible advantage of the situation.
Well, they took too much advantage.
They did.
Because it was terrible.
Might
and
backfire
not only
on
that, you know, Jim Baker ran his whole administration. Every time he had a press conference, I still remember he had six guys behind him, and they answered all the questions.
Sure.
I mean, this guy wasn't qualified to be a president. He was qualified to be a B actor, and that's about it.
I agree. Hey, thanks for your call, Vern.
Sure.
I do appreciate it. Got a moment here. I think we're going to try and squeeze this in. Is the orchestra ready for some Republican love? Someone go get that band. There he is. Boy, I'll tell you, they were patiently waiting. Got a couple of letters here. We'll cut this short. We won't do them all, but God bless you, Guy James. How lucky we are in Fort Myers area to have such a great radio personality such as yourself. Just think, we have Rush, Hannity, Bortz, O'Reilly, Savage, Laura Ingraham, Tony Snow, Jim Watkinson, and more. My, oh my, No, they've got this wrong. But anyway, how you must enjoy being in with that lineup. Well, I have to admit it does help me stay squeaky clean, because after listening to a couple of those shows you mentioned, I really need a shower. I wonder if you heard Savage this week. And he called the members of MoveOn.org dirty communist bastards. That's a fact. If you can listen to that guy for longer than 10 minutes without realizing he's a raving lunatic, then you too need some of that OxyContin or other mind-altering drugs. And I did notice that every one of them this week took the opportunity to jump aboard the Kaufman and Ronald Reagan and use it as a political surfboard, and that is a fact. Next letter. It's just too bad the great communicator, President Reagan, never got to hear your sorry-ass excuse of a radio program. He would have laughed out loud just as I do while I listen every week. You are just the type of guy he hated. He hated communists with a passion and finally freed the world of all but two of them, you and Fidel Castro. I love this. This is good. Fidel and me, the only two commies left in the world. I wonder if Fidel knows this. I got to call him later on. We got a hotline right into, you know. Why anybody would be stupid enough to listen to your show is a big mystery to me. Okay, I could be wrong here, but I'm looking up in this first paragraph. Doesn't it say I listen every week? And now he says, why anybody would be stupid enough to listen to your show is a big mystery to me. My wife thinks you're totally nuts, too. She sent you an email a while back, and you didn't even answer her. It was the one about you being a commie chicken plucker, so I know you didn't forget it. I love it. Sir, I have come to the inescapable conclusion that you are suffering from some sort of debilitating mental illness. Why else would you subject yourself and your listeners to 3 hours of torturous dialogue each week? Your condescending snobbery toward listeners who disagree with you is a bit trite, don't you think? But now, old hat, shop-worn and musty, call it what you want, but it's time to move on towards a new tack. Your old one isn't working. Perhaps you could ascend to a higher standard by taking lessons from the great one, Rush Limbaugh. Oh, I don't know about taking lessons from Rush. I don't think I could ever, ever attain the tolerance for Oxycontin that he has. I mean, he took it by the shovelful. And even if I did, I don't have a mate to send out and buy it for me. I'd have to go. That just wouldn't work. Guy James, it seemed like you take particular delight in denigrating our president. Yes, I said our president because no matter how much you hate it, he is your president too. It's sad that you have such a low opinion of such a great man because it just shows how ignorant and uninformed you are about political matters. Oh, yeah. Everyone knows President Bush is the best president we could possibly have. I, for one, am grateful to have a good, upstanding, here you go, folks, moral Christian man in the Oval Office. Jeez, that makes me want to cry. There isn't anyone wearing a blue dress now, and I'm eternally grateful for that. Well, I'm sorry to the author of this letter. I think we're all wearing a blue dress now. I really do. I don't know about you, but I feel screwed by this administration over and over and over again. So, hey, that's going to have to be it for Republican Love. We had a lot more letters this week, but we're going to have to let them go. We're getting down toward the home stretch here in the program today. We've got Ann in Fort Myers. Ann, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Those were heartwarming letters.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to mention two things just briefly in terms of the whole money situation of how our whole society is running right now. I disagree with that woman as well. My position was dropped from my job in the last 3 years. I took on a position of three people who were laid off because of me. Wound up leaving that, and now the company I work for doesn't even offer health insurance. And I'm making less than I did 3 years ago.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Yeah. But I had a question about Pinellas. I don't know a lot about him, and I heard what you said earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking he was a good guy because I was watching the commercials where he's talking about the environment, and I'm very environmentally concerned. Could you just enlighten me a little bit more about him? He's not a good guy, I guess.
Well, he bailed on Al Gore. I mean, they promised Al Gore the support during a 2000 election, knowing full well that Al needed the support of the Cuban community. And he's the mayor of Miami-Dade County over there, and, you know, very influential. And he bailed out, went to Spain on vacation, skipped out on rallies he was supposed to attend. He would not appear with Al Gore. And over and over and over again, he stabbed him in the back. The big rally the night before the election, which was a big deal in Miami, a big deal. Alex Pinellas didn't even show up, said it was late, and he had to get to bed. He just stabbed Al Gore in the back, and Al Gore said he was the most treacherous man that he had to deal with in all of this country during the 2000 election. Al Gore's an honest man. And if Al Gore says he was treacherous to him, and of course, the newspapers over there have done stories ad infinitum on this and have not been able to come up with anything to back Pinellas' story that he helped Al Gore, because it's just plain simple that he did not. Now, I'll admit to you this. The man is an attractive candidate to many. He comes across as a great speaker. He comes across as a good glad-hander. He's the perfect politician. He came to this deal we had down in Naples the other night and brought four busloads of people along with him, and they literally took that thing over. So he knows what he's doing, and he's got plenty of money behind him. But I resent the fact that he dirty-dealed Al Gore. I cannot forget that, and I cannot back any Democrat that would do that to our presidential candidate.
Right. Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for keeping us enlightened, and thank you for your show.
Thank you for your call.
Bye-bye.
We don't have time for any more callers. We've got a board full of them up there right now. I did want to mention briefly about what I thought was the funniest thing I saw all week. And right during the middle of the day, I think sometimes I've fallen asleep and been dreaming because what I see on the news just can't be for real. I must be dreaming. Anyway, this week I thought I was dreaming. I heard this story about Gaddafi plotting to kill Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia a couple of days ago, and I thought it was another one of those dreamy things. And you know, I said to myself, now what? That simply can't be true, because you know why it can't be true? Because Al Gore, or not Al Gore, George Bush, and all these Republican folks have been saying we tamed that guy. They've been using him as the poster boy, saying, "Let's see." Over in Iraq, we told Saddam what was what, and the rest of those people over there in the Middle East and the rest of those people, well, they're scared to death of George Bush. And they're going to do anything he tells them to do from now on. So this was really worthwhile because, man, he's got the fear in him now. And look at this. Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons, and he's toeing the line, and he's just a good boy. Forget that he had everything to do with the Lockerbie. Forget that we're now dealing with another terrorist. But all of a sudden, he's a good guy. Well, my, oh my, isn't that something? And now we find out he's plotting to kill Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. You know, these guys look more and more ridiculous every single day. Sometimes I just can't believe how Mickey Mouse, and my apologies to Mickey Mouse, how Mickey Mouse they look. Say, it's been another good show. I've enjoyed talking to each and every one of you, whether we've agreed or disagreed. Oh, there was two of you I didn't enjoy talking to. You were pretty foolish. But anyway, we enjoy it. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left of is the truth on The Guy James Show.
The Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer, Gene Charles. Research director, Michael Merrick. Production manager, Frank Princeton. Program coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Many more will pay their respects. I'm Deirdre Bryant. Former President Ronald Reagan was entombed in the early morning hours. About 30 people were present, including staff members from the Reagan Library and Secret Service agents. Family members left hours earlier after ceremonies on both coasts. ABC's Aaron Katursky says the library is preparing for a large number of visitors.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Library will prepare the president's cliffside gravesite before the library reopens to the public Monday. Thousands are expected to pay their respects at the hilltop site, chosen by Mr. Reagan himself as his final resting place. The library also expects to become a must-see attraction for Los Angeles vacationers, so at least for a while, hours there will be extended.
President Bush devoted his weekly radio address to Ronald Reagan.
He was a courageous patriot whose leadership transformed the country and the world he leaves behind.
John Kerry delivered the Democratic response and urged the